It takes a special kind of stupid to want to actually join the state of West Virginia right now. I don't mean move here. I mean actually become a political unit of the state of West Virginia as an, you know, a neighbor, a county. We'll get to it.
It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this 25th day of October 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and all times in between, and the great globe round. Yes. And if you show up right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveteran, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third-stage guild navigator, knows better than to fold space into an atmospheric river. Hi, I'm Robin. And every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. We had a an amazing, absolutely mind-boggling, community-made Friday on the Front Porch miracle this past Friday. Meaning that we've just got an ordinary fundraising goal for the remainder of this week and this month. And what does that mean? Well, it means that we are to finish the month. We are at 1425, and we send out thanks so very much. Thanks to Mark, and thanks to Mark. It's the 25th day of the month is Fraternity of Mark's Day. Thank you, Peter. Thank you most kindly. To Larry, thank you so very much. Let me recalculate. 11:25. Larry sent along to have a show on me. So thank you, Larry. Thank you, Pam in Washington State. So thank you, Samson. Thank you, Josh. Thank you so very much to Gary and Gaia. Thank you to Jan and Jerry. Thank you to our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow. Thank you, Philip in Maryland. Thank you to Stacy. Thank you to our dear friend down in the South Pacific. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to make this little now 16 plus, well, it's actually eight more than 18 and a half year old broadcast effort, independent though it is, and without corporate sponsors though it is, and without Buy Gold Now ads though it is, and without Stupid Beats ads though it is, continue to be a going concern. we talk about community-made miracles. Well, the horn itself is a community-made miracle. Ah, okay, well, the atmospheric river has flowed past Sparky, so glad to know it is, and glad to know that you're not all flooded out, Sparky. Now, I had a note from our dear friend Rico. Hey, Sister Soldier. Have I been promoted? Wow, 16 years is so impressive. Definitely a credit to you and to the whole amazing horn community. I'm so proud to be a part of it. Also, I'm working my ass off these days, so I'm grateful to be able to contribute. Sorry I missed Friday, but I'm proposing a $160 challenge for the first 16 years, and I'll kick in another $160 for the next 16 if it's met. Buddha bless you, my queen. Oh, thank you. Signed, Rico, in the lovely bomb cyclone free Berg. Yes. And really, Rico says, 16 years under the circumstances is incredibly impressive. And it really is amazing that we've kept this going like we have. And the credit is all to y'all. Every last bit of it. So there's a $160 challenge on the table. If it gets met during the program, Rico's going to double it. And that'll get us to, that'll knock us down further to, $805 to go. So thank you, Rico, and thank you to anyone who jumps in to knock that $160 out. And thank you, Christopher, for getting us started. Thanks, Christopher. That's wonderful. And we're at $155, and we'll work from there. Thank you, Christopher. Thank you so kindly. Fantastic Friday miracle, Christopher says. And it was. It was just amazing. Now, as far as announcements on the program schedule is concerned, another reminder, I'm kind of a nervous mess, but in a good way. A week from, well, who knows? By this time a week from today, Agnes and I may be where we're going. We may have arrived by this time. Because I'm hoping we're out by like 5 o'clock in the morning on Monday and zoom on down the road. I'll probably be pretty, well, I won't be able to get the rig set up Monday. There's a possibility we might get it set up for a program on Tuesday. I can't imagine that we won't be able to have some programming in the days leading up to, for instance, there will be a Friday on the front porch. A week from this Friday, that would be the 1, 2, 3, November the 5th, okay? There'll be a Friday on the front porch. Not sure if I'll be in a place in my head on Monday where I can have enough, capacity, let's use that word, capacity to broadcast, and then definitely no show the 9th, 10th, 11th. From the 9th forward, we're playing it by ear, and I'm still working on the possibility of a fill-in host. We will test that possibility once we get set up where we are, and see how that all plays out. So it may not just be all dead air while I'm flat on my back recovering. As to this week, no prayer meeting Wednesday because I have a 3 o'clock appointment, 2.5 hours away from here. And that'll take an hour to an hour and a half. And that means there's no way I can get back in time for a program. But apart from that, today, tomorrow, Thursday and Friday are all as they should be. Okay? Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much for getting us started, or not getting us started, but jumping in along with Christopher to help get us started. We've got $145 to go on Rico's challenge. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you. It's more in Monday, we might all recall. And since Since we won't be having more on Monday for a little bit, let's do this the right way.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed. Aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, friends and neighbors, we've got them all right here. Just a few mere steps off the carnival midway, where only recently you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain and dire attempt to bring home a precious little baby iguana. Yes, 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 right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, resides the entire panoply, the entire host of modern Moranity. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, maggots, libertarians, republicans, all, and they're all right here. They will shock, they will astound, they will horrify, and it all happens for less per hour than the price of a half a stick of gum. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed, right here. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil, they all reside, and you will see them. Well, no, this is a radio program. You'll hear them, but hear them you will, and you will be astounded. Now, as you enter the Moran Monday tent, the standard warning applies. Keep a close hand on purses, wallets, fanny packs, watches, bracelets, toe rings, piercings, necklaces, little nose studs. It hurts when they come out. Children, small dogs, European-style messenger bags, crossbody bags, and even that little iguana that somehow you did manage to win by throwing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls. Because, after all, the Morans can be grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. You really, really will. Especially on a day like today. Let's see here. Where to begin? Which Moran gets the honor of being first chosen? Who will it be? Who will it be? I think I know. Yeah, I do. It's one of those situations where we have to take into account the fact that there aren't a great number of locational details, but just the same, we'll get there. We'll sort this out. It all takes place. There was a poem by Allen Ginsberg called At a Supermarket in California. And it is a brilliant poem. It was among the least objectionable in terms of sketchy language of his poems, and so that's how it found itself in some of my college modern American literature textbooks, because it wasn't just super duper filled with things like the F-bomb. Well, this doesn't take place in a supermarket in California. This takes place in a Target. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maggots. I could have saved this for prayer meeting Wednesday. Ordinarily, I might have. But we're not going to be having prayer meeting Wednesday, so it winds up on Moran Monday instead. You can tell it's Target because of the red design elements. And there's a shirt, T-shirt on display. And it just says Pride with the colors of the rainbow. And a Target employee has been accosted by, of course, a moron. And the following transpires.
They're gonna call the cops. Oh, I hope they do. Hey, do you guys support the satanic pride propaganda?
Both.
You support it?
Satan and pride.
You support Satan?
Mm-hmm.
Satan and pride.
I don't believe in God.
Wow. Did
you need help with something?
You support the propaganda that's targeting the kids?
Nothing targeting kids.
It's all over kids' TV shows. It's all over. They're targeting
kids. Kids can choose to wear whatever they want.
Do you support the sexualization of kids through pride propaganda by corporate?
Pride propaganda!
I'm just asking people questions. What about you, sir? Do you support this?
I'm not answering any questions, but if you're here to cause any disturbance in the store...
I'm just asking questions. Do you work for the Target?
Disrupting.
Do you work
for Target? I do, actually.
Where's your name tag?
I am the undercover loss prevention.
Ow!
Okay. So... I'm just asking questions. So do you support the satanic propaganda?
I'm not answering your questions. What you need to do is you either need to leave the store.
God will judge you guys.
Okay.
I mean, I can't.
He
won't if I don't believe in it.
It's a great idea. I mean, not if I don't believe in it.
Are you going to purchase that shirt?
Hey, ma'am, do you support this?
What did I just say?
You support pride propaganda? Whoa, I'm buying this.
I need you to...
Whoa, let go, ma'am.
You just said you're not buying it.
I'm going to buy it and burn it.
Okay, that's your choice. You can totally do that.
Well, what I said is you need to leave. You can't ask anybody any more questions. You can't disrupt
freedom of speech.
People.
Call the police.
Do you want me to call?
Yeah, call them.
Okay.
I love, and y'all know, when Moran says, freedom of speech, man. I got freedom of speech here in my Target. It's freedom of speech. No, dumbass. Last I checked, Target has not become the government of the United States, and the First Amendment only protects you from having your speech suppressed without a damn good reason by the government of the United States or one of the several states. They can suppress the daylights out of you otherwise. Yeah, thank you. I was afraid of that. Thanks, Dave, number 11. Pot it up, girl, Dave says. Girl potting now. Let me get to it that way. It's so odd. I've got two audio sources for playback. One of them is through the production machine, and it gets nice and loud. The other is through another channel on the Rodecaster, and not so much. I was trying to play it back on the Rodecaster. Sometimes the magic works. Sometimes it doesn't. So we will. We'll try this again, and let's run it. Yeah, because you may not have heard it. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
What's God going to think of that?
I don't believe in God.
Wow.
Did
you need help?
I love that. I love the little...
Support the propaganda.
I don't believe in God.
Kids.
Wow. Now, understand, dude is videoing himself. He's actually... I mean, he thinks he's making Jesus have a tingle down his leg or something because he's... grunting and hooting about these pride t-shirts, pride corporate propaganda, propagandizing our propagandated children. What a fuckwit. But, you know, evangelical Christian. Thus, you know, fuckwit. Sure. Anyway, onward.
There's nothing targeting kids.
It's all of our kids' TV shows. It's all over. They're targeting
kids.
Kids
can choose to wear whatever they want.
Do you support the sexualization of kids through pride propaganda by corporate?
Is there something that we can help you with?
I'm just asking people questions. What about you, sir? Do you support this?
I'm not answering any questions, but if you're here to cause any disturbance in the store...
I'm just asking questions. Do you work for Target?
I do, actually.
Where's your name tag?
Where's your name tag?
I'm the undercover loss prevention.
Oh, okay.
So...
I'm just asking questions. So do you support this satanic propaganda?
I'm not answering your questions.
Where's your name tag? Unscannable! Why don't you got no tattoo?
What you need to do is you either need to leave the store...
God will judge you guys.
Okay.
I mean, I can't. He won't if I don't.
And also, is that our shirt?
Yeah, it is.
Are you going to purchase that shirt?
Hey, ma'am, do you support this?
What did I just say?
You support pride propaganda? Whoa, I'm buying this.
I need you to... Whoa,
let go, ma'am.
You just said you're not buying it.
I'm going to buy it and burn it.
Okay, that's your choice. You can totally do that.
But what I said is you need to leave. You can't ask anybody any more questions. You can't disrupt any
more people. Freedom of speech. Call the police.
Do you want me to call?
Yeah, call him.
Okay.
Trespass me. I don't care, dude. Open Satanists, guys. That's what we're going to get up against. This open Satanists. Like, they're...
You're just anti-anyone.
Hey, excuse me, ma'am. Do you support Pride?
No. You can't disrupt any more guests. You need to leave.
Sorry.
Sir, do you support the satanic Pride propaganda?
I'm all non-violent and everything. I really am. But... I'm guessing the loss prevention dude, he's young and fit, and I just have this sense that he could take Jesus fella pretty easy. But there are rules relating to battery and false arrest and things like that, so they know that they can't touch them. But golly, you really do want to see this guy start spitting out his own teeth. It's just, yeah.
Mm. Doesn't care to talk to someone so hateful and judgmental.
And he's got a t-shirt on with the face of the Statue of Liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woof.
To be honest, I'm quite happy.
Hey, excuse me, do you guys support this?
They do.
Do you guys support the propaganda?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
So you can please...
It's satanic, man.
Please ignore him.
Do you know what the real rainbow is?
Please ignore him. He's a moron. Ignore him. These are a couple of Target customers trying to check out without being accosted by some fucking Christian.
Stands for?
You can just continue.
The real rainbow is from God. The real rainbow is from God.
Okay.
Yeah, the real rainbow is actually fine droplets of air in their billions, maybe trillions, suspended between the heavens and the earth in such a way that they form a prism through which the sun shines, giving us the characteristic Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet that we know as the rainbow. But some Bronze Age people a long time ago said, no, that's a miracle. See, that's what I mean when I say that maybe we shouldn't take advice from people who didn't understand why it rains. Yeah, supposedly, the rainbow is a promise by the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. Okay, I murdered everybody on the planet except for, like, one family. But I won't do that with water again. You'll notice the with water. I'll never flood the whole earth again. Fingers are definitely crossed on volcanoes and earthquakes. And asteroids. Because there was nobody there to record it, and presumably he didn't hang a bow in the sky after the asteroid wiped out the dinosaurs, but, well, who's counting?
You forgot to take your crazy meds today, sir.
Yeah, you can't touch them, but you can sure verbally abuse them, apparently.
You forgot to take your crazy meds today.
You go, girl. She's fierce.
Doing self-checkout? Sir, are you doing self-checkout?
Hey, sir, do you support this propaganda?
Ignore him.
Ignore him.
Yeah.
Do you support it or no?
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Asking questions.
Are you going to purchase that or not?
Hey, sir, do you support this propaganda?
I need you to stop.
Huh?
I need you to stop.
See, he thinks it turns Jesus on that he won't stop, and he won't let the satanic lady make him stop witnessing for Jesus about how Jesus hates the gays and the lesbians and the bisexuals and the transsexuals and the queers and the queer questionings and the intersexed and the asexuals and anybody else. It definitely turns Jesus on. Puts a little tent in his dress.
Are you going to purchase the shirt, your little propaganda shirt, or not?
Hey, ma'am, do you support this?
You're not going to be.
Do you support Pride?
Everybody here does. You should probably move somewhere else.
And can you? Did you notice what happened at the very end? He was all bold and brave and shit. And then you hear the magic words.
Hey, ma'am, do you support this?
You're not going to be.
Do you support Pride?
Everybody here does. You should probably move somewhere else.
You look at a car. Yeah. So what happens is at one point you can hear the loss prevention guy saying, "Yeah, I've called the police. They're on the way." All of a sudden, he drops that T-shirt like a hot rock, and he is out of there. Now, we don't have follow-up on this, but hopefully the internet will find his name, and, you know, maybe he'll be jobless, or because consequences. It's a teachable moment, and sometimes you have, with assholes like this, you have to teach them through their wallet. Mm-hmm. Subject line, the Jewish scriptures. Stephen New York says, the funniest thing, if these weirdos were to speak to Jewish folks, they would find that the flood, rainbow, etc. are allegories. They're not facts. Oh, but no, he's a literalist. He believes that the King James Version of the Bible is, you know, God whispered the Bible into the names of the translators who were putting together the King James Bible, and that's why it says goodwill toward men instead of toward men of goodwill. And he drops the T-shirt on the floor that he was going to buy to burn. Or maybe fill with Tannerite and shoot. Or something, you know, one of those things that Republican voters do. Matt in San Francisco says, oh, if only I had the pleasure of helping this guy when I was a store director at Target. I was thinking the same thing. It could have been a much more interesting video. Let's see. Let's get Mr. Arm behind Mr. Back, and let's bend Mr. Elbow so you can. Yeah. Hey, can you touch your shoulder blades with your index finger? Can you do that? Good. And now let's take a little walk out this door. Yes. Bye. No, I'm sure Matt would never engage in physical violence. Stephen New York says, I'd like to nominate that wonderful woman for a cowbell for, do you support Pride? Yes, everyone here does. Absolutely. And Flavio says, that would not happen at the Mall of America. That's in Bloomington, Minnesota. And he would have been tossed out on his ass. They don't put up with any shit like that. He was dealt with more restraint and kindness than he actually deserved. Nail him up, I say. Nail some sense into him. Sometimes it's all they understand. They just turned me right side up. Those Romans are awesome. Jack in Shreveport says, speaking of freedom of speech, the Saturday Washington Journal referred to a Wall Street Journal opinion piece that made the supposition that education was a free speech issue and that public education is unconstitutional. The author was Philip Hamburger. No kidding. I've got the link somewhere. Well, that certainly sounds more anic. But then again, it's coming off the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal, which is a far different prospect than the actual news reporting pages. The op-ed page is, of course, a maggoty right-wing sewer. Mm-hmm. Oh, and a little response from someone named James Mercer. You remember when Joe Manchin said that the rumor of his departure from the Democratic Party, bullshit, B-U-L-L with a capital B. James Mercer replied and said, 9 to 5 is bullshit. Unpaid lunch breaks are bullshit. Working all day to go home and have 2 hours of free time before bed is bullshit. 5-day work week is bullshit. Working yourself to death is bullshit. Retiring at 65, unlikely, is bullshit. Starting your adult life in debt from student loans is bullshit. Giving kids 7 hours of school and then homework to ready them for the never-ending grind is bullshit. It is so frustrating that we have one chance at life on this earth, and humanity chose taxes and credit scores and pollution instead of floating in the ocean and eating fruit and hanging out. Amen, Mr. Mercer. Amen. You know, so often we look at things and we think that things are the way they are because that's the way things just are and that's the way things are supposed to be. I was thinking about that in terms of because of a conversation I was having about why it's so hard to get anything done. The for-profit media pile on President Biden is absolutely repulsive, and they're just doing nitwit Nero's work for him because I think they secretly or not so secretly want him back. All this competence and all this normalcy is just not good for the news department. And nitwit Nero's mad barkings and overall just crushing criminality are. And so, for instance, well, it all has to do with what kind of a Congress you have. FDR would have been FDR, but without the congressional majorities he had, most of the things that he got done would not have gotten done. Depending on when it, which Congress it was, he either had 58, 59, or 60 senators. Okay. At the time, out of a Senate of 96. He had 300-plus Democrat majorities or Democratic majorities of more than 300 Democrats in the House. And we've talked from time to time about those just narrow little window openings when the American government can actually get shit done. Classic examples are the period of time in which the southern states were not in the Congress, and so Lincoln could get amazing things done, like the Morrill Act that created land-grant universities that allowed publicly funded universities to rise up and flourish. And, of course, FDR's brief shining moment to make things better. The period of JFK's presidency and Lyndon Johnson's, when you can get the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, and the Great Society War on Poverty done. We haven't really seen one of those in a while, and Joe Biden certainly doesn't have one of those. The House continues to do its job. The Senate is, well, it's like its own little shithole country, to quote a recent attempted president. Which brings me to something Ron and Raleigh wrote. Subject line, build back sorta. I've been listening today as senior Democratic politicians touted the watered-down bill that they may pass, $1.75 trillion over 10 years. I'll leave the ciphering to you. Yeah, it's $175 billion a year. That's not even what we throw away on missile systems for Israel. And then divide that by 50 states. So $175 billion a year So that's one. Not divided by 50. Yeah, that's about $3.5 billion a year. And it won't be spread out that way, simply because some states are bigger than others. I mean, if you were to give that kind of really whopping big money to, say, West Virginia, our legislature and our Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, in no way, shape, form, or fashion are we going to do anything here that'll make anybody think they're getting any free shit. You got to work for your shit in West Virginia, good God. Right. But Ron and Raleigh says, I think the citizens of West Virginia will be as poor as they are now. Meanwhile, Senator Joe Igham Fu Manchin, I got mine, F you, will be a good deal richer than he is today. According to Pelosi, Schumer, et al., this bill is the best thing since sliced bread. No increase in the minimum wage. If dental, hearing, and other programs for seniors are included, they won't go into effect for 5 years. Score another win for obstructionist Republicans. So chalk up returning the House and Senate control to the Republicans in 2022. You are, you remind me, Ron, and this is not a criticism, that no pessimist is ever disappointed. And your pessimism is not entirely well placed, but I'm going to choose to dare to dream and hope that through the efforts of people like Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Lauren Clanny Oakley, Bobblehead Boebert, and Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cueball, and of course, Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Did you think I was going to stop using that? Fuck no, no. That maybe America can be taught to see the error of our ways and actually expand the House's majority. And again, the only way out is through. So, where the Senate is concerned, we kind of need to, even if we feel a little grim, we need to be happy warriors and bust our little asses. Okay, so, but, well, mine. And make Joe Manchin irrelevant. I mean, this isn't a promise or anything, and it's not some sort of an inducement or threat to bring in contributions so we can meet RICO's 16th anniversary challenge or anything. But I swear, if we could render Joe Manchin irrelevant, so that we could go without his stupid vote, and Kyrsten Sinema's vote irrelevant, I would be tempted to dance naked in the yard. I know. The horror. But it really is a shame that a couple of individuals are able, because of the antiquated and decidedly undemocratic rules of the Senate, to fuck 300 million Americans, or at least all of the Americans who aren't their billionaire friends. It just really is. And the only way out is through, and the only way to change that is to elect more Democratic senators and hang on to the seats we have. Or so it seems to me. By the way, as to the dude at Target Boy, we at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Emporium are willing to offer this idiot a rainbow-colored cross to be tacked up on. Well, you're a giver, Dave, Crazy Dave. You're a giver, and I thank you for your generosity. And what I really want to find out is the cop showed up. He tried to run. They tased him. Now stop that. He was white. He would not be tased. They might give him a good talking to and, I don't know, take him to Burger King. You think the suits at Burger King cringe when they realize that people still remember that the cops took that young Nazi to Burger King after he had slaughtered 9 individuals at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston, South Carolina? Do you think they cringe? Damn it, why won't that story go away? It's not our fault the cops took... Why couldn't they have taken him to McDonald's? Oh, and as in continuing the morality, for fuck's sake, via the Daily Beast, a report today. Remember, last Friday we were talking about the fact that the Trump grifters are now selling Trump welcome mats. Don't blame us. This House voted for Trump. If you were invited to a home for, say, a dinner party and you didn't know, or cocktails or whatever, or a pool party, I don't know, and you showed up at the house and there was a Trump welcome mat there, yes, I realize the first impulse would be to go and find a really big, fresh, not particularly well put together pile of dog shit, but march right through it 2 or 3 times and go up and wipe your feet on it. Yes. But after that, would you feel safe going into that house? What if you had not known? I know it's a reach, but what if you hadn't known that your hosts were maggots? What if they weren't burbling around all Trumpy maggoty at work or wherever, and you had no idea? You thought they were normal people, and you show up, and it turns out that, because you have to be deep into the Trump cult to be willing to spend money on that. You know, something like that. You know, the ancient Romans used to have welcome mats, only they were mosaics, so they weren't much good for foot wiping. But it would simply say HAVE. That's the English word have. No. It was an abbreviation. But, you know, they hadn't invented periods or semicolons or anything like that, or as they call them around here, explanation points. And so what that actually meant was H stood for hospice, from which we get the word hospitality and hospital and hospitable. Hospice means guest, and Ave, you know, Ave Maria, welcome, guest welcome. The Caesars, some of them being like they were, maybe some people, I don't know, in Pompeii had, you know, Hail Caesar, for a welcome mat. You know, Caesar, 79 AD. I wonder why that mountain's smoking like that, Marveline. Because, you know, there were Marvelines and Emerys back in ancient Rome, too. Lee in New York says, Trump welcome mat, be glad that the homeowners tell you who they are. Precisely. But wouldn't that be gross? So I mention all that because they've got a new hustle. The Daily Beast reported that for $27.99, you can purchase from him, and it was probably made in a sweatshop in China somewhere for about 15 cents, so it's pure profit. The oldest son, Donald Jr., Trader Tot, is hawking T-shirts on his official site with the mocking slogan, "Guns don't kill people, Alec Baldwin kills people." And then he put up a Photoshop picture of Alec Baldwin wearing that T-shirt, which is a form of appropriation of likeness that one would hope would be actionable. And Jamie Ross at the Daily Beast reported, "It's the latest and possibly most egregious example of Trump World's celebration of Thursday's fatal accident on the set of Rust. The alt-right has reveled in the shooting due to Baldwin's previous mockery of ex-President Donald Trump and his advocacy for tighter controls on firearms and, you know, cops not murdering people in cold blood, that kind of thing. And you know, all because he played a satirical and, frankly, somewhat comically flattering version of Nitwit Nero. It's sort of kind in a way. So guns don't kill people. Alec Baldwin kills people. I'm surprised they got the spelling right, but, you know, little miracles. Instead of saying Alex, right? But there has been more development in that story over the course of the weekend. And it really had very little, if anything, to do with Alec Baldwin. Yes, he pulled the trigger. But the first assistant director handed him the weapon, yelling, "Cold gun! Cold gun!" Which is what you yell on a movie set or film set, or TV show set, in regard to proper handling of firearms. Cold gun, meaning it was not loaded. I think there were three firearms on that set. People shooting at each other all the time. A lot of shooting going on. Incidentally, just as a point of trivia, that same Bonanza branch, ranch, whatever, in New Mexico was also the setting for the location shoot of Blazing Saddles. And so the church where Alec Baldwin was began shooting and exited is the same church, I think, that you see in Blazing Saddles, in which the preacher says, "We will read this morning from the book of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and Duck," and where the where Gabby Johnson delivers the authentic frontier gibberish. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that that first assistant director, there had been, I think, two prior accidental discharges on the set, and that's part of what got the IOTC members so upset. But not only that, assistant director Dave Halls worked on a film called Freedom's Path a couple of years ago. And the production company Rocket Soul Studios said that a firearm on that set acts unexpectedly discharged. Rocket Soul Studios said in a statement that they gave to CNN, "Halls was removed from set immediately after the prop gun discharged. Production did not resume filming until Dave was off-site. An incident report was taken and filed at that time." And that Halls himself seemed very remorseful over his actions and he understood the reasons for his termination. And he it was who handed the loaded gun, loaded somehow or another. I can't imagine why you would ever have real bullets in a gun on a movie set. Maybe our dear friend Dan Fisher will explain why that might happen at some point in time. The thing is, as John Eric Huxham proved, blanks, so-called blanks, can be deadly as well because there's wadding and there are fragments of metal. And that's why there are safety protocols for even the discharge of a gun with a blank in it. But Alec Baldwin, apparently, having been told cold gun, went ahead with the rehearsal as it had been blocked and planned. So that really doesn't matter, simply because maggot's gonna maggot. And I'm sure that, yeah, they'll make a little coin off of those T-shirts, because somewhere out there in maggot land, there's a whole bunch of people. You know what? I want one of them guns that don't kill people, Alec Baldwin kills people T-shirts. I wonder if Wayne the Peter's going to get one of them. Or maybe, what was her name? Dana Lush? Or Coleon Noir? Every time I say his name, I feel like, W.C. Field. Coleon Noir. Right. It makes it funnier that way. Ron in Raleigh says, you must understand, I've been on the planet a good deal longer than you have. When I called bullshit when Ronnie Reagan became president, knowing full well that the country had taken a massive wrong turn, was I being a pessimist? I've always considered myself a pragmatist. Being a black man that grew up in the Jim Crow era, I may have a different take on how shit goes down. Being a happy warrior may be all right for white folks. I've never had the luxury. Well, I understand your point, Ron. And I don't think having a grim understanding of the behavior of the American people is at all wrong. I'm simply suggesting that some people can be motivated by fear and anger. I think a lot of people were motivated in 2020 by exactly that, because we were absolutely terrified of what would happen in a second Trump term. What was that saying? Vote like your life depends on it, because it does. So I don't know. Maybe you're right and I'm wrong. Maybe it's, but it is true that a pessimist is never disappointed. If things go right, the pessimist is like, sure was good to be wrong about that. And if things go to shit, pessimist, well, I told you. Maybe it isn't pessimism. Maybe it is just pragmatism. But I think if we campaign from a place of fear, it probably won't work out too well. Because the other side can out horror us, out fear us all day long and twice on Sundays. As by the way, the talking about welcome mats, and welcome is gone in technology. Lee in New York says, computer initial screens used to say, welcome to, welcome. Yeah, I remember that with AOL. That ended when a hacker broke into a system and justified it because the screen said, welcome. I was disappointed that people do not understand that the welcome mat does not mean come in and take what you want. Now screens tell you that it is criminal to enter if you have not been given access. Yeah, with the little FBI seal there, kind of like it's in front of movies and shit. As to salads, Jeremy in Vermont says, I think blazing salads are something you can only receive in a dessert bar where they don't serve desserts, and the salad is full of spices and all things hot, and there's only one rule while eating said salad, no drinks of any kind allowed. Ooh, that's a salad challenge for salad days. Maybe you would get it at a restaurant called, I don't know, Just Desserts. Huh? Really? Crickets? Okay. Because more on Monday, another individual from the insurrection of January 6th, another maggot, another treasonous American who attacked the seat of constitutional governance and constitutional governance itself has gone to court. Mm-hmm. Philip James Weisbecker. Actually outed himself on Facebook. He took a screen cap of a video in which Glenn Greenwald was yapping away with noted liberal broadcaster Tucker Carlson. That's a joke. And he said, if you would like to know the truth, just ask. Yeah. And over on Twitter, Empty Wheel. And I'm trying to remember. Marcy Wheeler. Yeah, she said, congratulations to Greenwald, that's his Twitter handle, Greenwald, whose appearance on Tucker Carlson led Philip Weisbecker to incriminate himself. And what a Lulu this dude is. She went on and said, in addition to believing that Trump is still the president, well, there was more, because there's always more with these cue ball maggots. Weisbecker talked about Ashley Babbitt, who was supposedly shot in the U.S. Capitol and was from Ocean Beach. Weisbecker said she did not exist, as he knew everyone from that area, and that he has asked his friends and no one knew her. Weisbecker asked where her, Ashley Babbitt's, funeral was. He stated it had not been here, San Diego. So she, Ashley Babbitt, was not from here, San Diego. Weisbecker said Babbitt was not actually her last name. And he went on and he talked about how he was at Trump's speech and was in the middle of it. He said during Trump's two-hour speech, where Trump laid out all the facts pertaining to the voter fraud, there were thousands of people already surrounding the Capitol. Weisbecker said none of that was on television. He stated Trump is still the president, and that all statistics showed it, and that he had, of course, researched the data. I did my own research. Meanwhile, it turns out that the maggots had rented out a bunch of rooms at the venerable old Willard Hotel. The original Willard was where Lincoln stayed when he snuck into Washington, D.C. prior to his inauguration. Had to sneak in because the freedom-loving Confederates wanted to murder him before he could get to D.C. Well, they they rented out these rooms, and it turned out that Robert Costa, who co-wrote Peril with Bob Woodward, was actually outside the Willard Hotel on January 5th, while Rudy Giuliani and Steve Bannon, the man who looks like hot dog smell, and others were together inside before the Save America rally of January 6th. And Costa, appearing on My Filthy Morning Habit, said, to this day, I wish I'd banged a little harder on that door because it was freezing cold night. I was roaming around, and I still remember we talked about it as we were writing it because we didn't know. When you write a book, it takes months to understand the context of what's happening, what actually happened. But that night was eerie. We didn't know at the time that Trump's over at the White House pounding into Pence in the one-on-one Oval Office meeting. And then after it doesn't go well for Trump, he calls into the Willard War Room. and this is the key thing we found for peril. It's not just a Willard war room happening in an isolated way across the street. The president is calling in. Trump's calling in. He's coordinating this effort to speak for Pence. Remember late at night, as you detailed earlier, Trump's issuing a statement saying Pence agrees with me. He's effectively taking over the vice presidency, at least in terms of the public message. This is all just hours before the insurrection. Yeah. He went on to say that this was criminal behavior. We talked recently with a Republican, former Republican, head of the criminal division in the Justice Department, who said there is a lay-down case just in what we know. U.S. Code Section 18 U.S. Code, Section 371. I'm sorry this sounds technical, but it is. It's a law that says it's a crime to defraud the government in any deceptive way, and that's exactly what they did here. So, of course, it was a conspiracy. It was a conspiracy to overturn the government of the United States of America. Plain and simple. Will he be prosecuted? Consider who the Attorney General is. Maybe we're at that looking forward and not back phase. Or maybe we'll just wait till a little closer to the election and see if dipshit announces his candidacy, then bust him or not bust him. It's really frustrating. Subject line, insurrection. Matt in San Francisco says, it's almost as if an independent inspector general is in order. Well, yes, it is. Kind of like we've been talking about since almost the very beginning, that this whole thing needs a special prosecutor with the breadth of a brief to chase it down, ferret it out wherever he finds the insurrection. But speaking of Merrick Garland, Steve Bannon, who was there as part of the plot, the man who looks like hot dog smell, this week he said that, no, the real coup was not against constitutional governance in the United States, that the real coup was a coup against the presidency of Nitwit Nero.
Pima County is the center of kind of the center of all this now, as the full forensic audit spreads to Pima.
Oh, and by the way, his broadcast, ironically enough, remember, if they're complaining about something, it's something they've already done or that they plan to do. It's all projection with them. And so remember, Bannon's podcast is called The War Room. Huh. Because that's what they were calling their little, their treasonous little dodge, the home of their conspiracy, the nest where the conspiracy cowbird was hatched at the Willard, that was the war room.
The county and the beginning of the decertification movement starts to get traction here. Nancy Pelosi called me a toady. Nancy, come on, you're a master strategist. Don't be throwing out insults. I'm a toady. Wow. Pretty cutting. It's Monday, 25th of October, year of our Lord, 2021. They were the opposition to Donald Trump. You just see us whining. Did you ever see Steve Bannon whine about all the crap they pulled on Russia and everything else? The answer is no.
That's Steve Bannon referring to himself in the third person, you know, just kind of like George Costanza. George is not happy. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. If Thanks for the suggestion, Brother Deacon. He said, do a morning show this prayer meeting Wednesday. Let's mix it up a wee bit, Reverend Robin. Ooh, I don't know if I could do a program in the morning. That would be weird. But, you know, remember, Steve Bannon is a believer in the turnings. I had a note from Dana. Over the weekend. Congratulations on 16 plus years. I've been listening on and off since about 2005. Back in those days, I would listen at work. That may have led to the demise of my employment, but oh well. I'm actually writing to you to comment on last Friday's 10/15, October the 15th, front porch, and the discussion of the fourth turning and the generational constellation. Robin Deere, like so many people, including Tom Hartman, who introduced me to this stuff, you and the front porchers left a very important generation out of your discussion, the silent. Mitch McConnell is of the silent generation, as is Newt Gingrich. Are we beginning to see a picture emerge here? The silent generation was born roughly from 1925 to 1945. They were the protected generation that came after the GI or greatest generation. They are the people who succeeded by simply showing up. As they're now old to very old, their influence is passing. For that matter, the influence of the baby boom is passing as we, yes, I'm a boomer, age out of influence. So the real movers and shakers right now are Gulp, Gen X. And then adds parenthetically, I've been following your transition since last year, and I commend your courage. I was pretty sure the snag you hit with the insurance company would be worked out. They just like to bat you around a bit before paying up. Yeah, well, if we're going to pay all that money, let's make them suffer a little bit. It's not like the surgery's going to hurt or anything. But not they're still being the assholes that the insurance industry are, saying, you know, we'll pay for two days in the hospital. After that, you're on your own. Ugh. Gross. But thanks for that. Thanks for that, Dana. And yeah, we did leave out the silent generation. And were they part of the, I mean, is that the same thing as the silent majority that Nixon and people like George Wallace were so intent to tap into? Well, again, Bannon is a subscriber to this fourth turning bullshit. And I guess he's talking. I mean, is he a boomer? I mean, I'm the very ass end of the boomer generation, or the very front of Generation X. I've always felt more X than boomer, simply because I've got more in common with Gen X. And we were the first to really get in there and play video games. I remember Pong and the Atari system. And Space Invaders. And they were so cool that you would put a quarter in a machine to be able to play it and waka 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 waka. Because Pac-Man was high tech. But thanks for that, Dana. And so I guess Bannon's a little butthurt about the fact that Nancy Pelosi is skewering him on the regular. Well, thank you, Todd. Thank you so much. We're down to 145 on Rico's 16th anniversary challenge. And oh my goodness gracious. Challenge met. And with a have a show on me from Kevin. Thank you so much. That's breathtaking. So Rico's challenge was met, and we got to have a show on me. And so that takes us down to, $700 to go to finish, the month of October. Thank you, Kevin. That's profound. That's mind-boggling. That's Well, I have a show when me comes with a cowbell. We had two of those, and it takes a great deal of stress off of me. And frankly, I don't. All that we can reduce is wonderful, because the packing alone is daunting. And sometime this week I have to go and get the oil changed and get the tires rotated. And it's just blowing my mind that this appears to really, 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 no kidding, be happening. As to Generation X, Steve in New York says, we were the first to take it as read that Social Security would not be there for us. Truth be told, I think that. Even more than that, I actually don't want Social Security. When taking unemployment screwed me on taxes and the government told me to go F myself when I needed it to stay in my apartment, I resolved to never want such things. Yeah, but the whole thing with Social Security, Steve, it is there for when you can no longer participate in the capitalist economic miracle that is working yourself to death for billionaires in America. And you may not want it, but you may wind up taking it. Because by the time you get to, you will probably be a very different person by the time you get to 67 or 70. You're part of the screwed generation, too. Remember, old Ronnie Reagan took his jacket off. Wait, Ronnie jacket off Reagan? Really? You too, buddy? We somehow didn't know, but somehow not surprised. But Ronnie took his jacket off, and Chris Tweedy Matthews will tell you breathlessly that Tip O'Neill rolled up his shirt sleeves and they sat down to work together and fuck America, and particularly fuck my generation and generations after me. Because too many people were collecting Social Security at 62 and 65. So the obvious solution was to make you have to survive longer to ever see a penny of it. And that's what they did to my generation and generations after. As I've said before, I remember it well. I'd rather die than take it, Steve says. Just one of those weird libertarian quirks I have in my otherwise progressive body. Well, just, you know, we'll get you there. Just stay with us. And eventually, because remember, the leader and creator of what was then known as objectivism, which is another way of just being shitty and saying shitty and selfish, namely Ayn Rand, well, she blew through all her money from writing those god-awful, scarcely readable books, and she was old and sick, and they signed her right up for all the things she said and she cashed every check. Damn right she did. Tara Devlin and I were talking earlier today, and we were talking about various media figures, and I mentioned how I prefer to Andrea Mitchell as Mrs. Greenspan, and how every time I see her, I think of young Alan Greenspan literally sitting at the feet of Ayn Rand and looking longingly at them. Mm-hmm. And that's enough to, that's a weight loss aid is what that is. Yeah. Oh, I get that. I get that. Ron and Raleigh says, if I'm a pessimist, what the hell is Steve? Member of the same club? But no, remember, I said I agree. You may just be a pragmatist. We may just be fucked. Meanwhile, right there on my computer screen, tell Joe Manchin, oppose Pelosi's plan. God, he loves the attention. But, you know, I guess everybody does. And by the way, speaking of Joe Manchin and his entitlement society, Flavio says, meanwhile, the Medicare replacement advantage scam continues apace. It's a scam. People are surrendering their Medicare lifetime investment, not entitlements, to private entities who will deny benefits for profits. Evil. Just evil. What's Biden doing about that? Medicare Advantage equals Medicare privatization. Sure does. Sure. And I don't know how we got here from talking about or listening to the maunderings of Steve Bannon blathering about how Merrick Garland helped to plot a coup against Nitwit Nero after the 2020 election. No, I don't. But just the same, something I ran across over the weekend. A name need not be attached to this, but I found it just, well, file this under why we can't have nice things. Now, this is someone who is a liberal and a progressive. And of course, you know, one of those kinds of progressives who think that, you know, they have all the answers and everybody who doesn't agree with them is a poopy head. The climate action portion of the spending bill, I'm probably getting the voice wrong. The climate action portion of the spending bill is just going to be a YouTube video where Joe Biden encourages recycling and then falls asleep. I guess this is one of those people, by God, he still should be burning. You're not falling asleep. He's in better health by far than Nitwit Nero was. I mean, I granted, that's kind of a low bar. But he's in pretty good shape for 78. By far, but, yeah. Well, okay, your poopy head is my poopy head is your duty head. But, yeah, duty head. It's a duty. So this individual apparently has signed on with the wing nuts who are convinced that somehow or another Joe Biden is mentally deficient. Knowing what I was about to, you can see how my brain switched those two brains. And then, of course, someone jumping in and agreeing, another member of the Purity Patrol. Seriously, though, you're not kidding. You did leave a part out, or he has multiple aphasia moments, though. Spelled T-H-O. La. Nothing against anyone with dementia or any kind. There are 40 types, but I think anyone who has dementia and is self-aware wouldn't run for and hold any elected office, much less president of the USA. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I think this is called for. Hold on. Let me take a second.
You dick!
Mm-hmm. And this is, you know,
we're not getting a pony. I'm not going to go vote in 2022. I'm mad. Republicans might as well be running things. It's just like they are. Fucking Democrats!
Utterly oblivious to the realities of American governance. Yeah, utterly, absolutely, totally, undeniably, unquestionably, oblivious. Screw prayer meetings. Maud Dib Monday, says Scary Jerry. Seriously, Auntie Robin, what about Dune? Did you see it? I've seen it four times now and still gasped audibly. Seen it? Did you see it? Waiting on your answer. No, I haven't. I'm saving it. I'm really anxious to see it, maybe tonight. And I'm hearing amazing things, but and the one thing that I've run across that I find a little distressing is, well, it was the same way with the Lord of the Rings movies. I mean, they're three books, so three movies. How they got three movies out of The Hobbit simply astonishes me, but never mind. So they split, if I understand correctly, Jerry, they split Dune into the first book, just Dune. They split, there's going to be a second movie to, so I don't know where this one leaves off or where the next one will start up, but wow, that kind of bummed me out a little bit, but I'm reading lots and lots of, oh my God, so yeah, I got to watch it. And, you know, I'm old enough that I've still got the David Lynch version seared into my being. How can this be? For he is the Kwisatz-Haderach. Yeah. Oh, Names of the Generations. Jack in Shreveport says, I have the same feelings as you do on what generation I belong to. One term I've heard that applies at least as providing differentiation from baby boomer is baby buster. It doesn't provide as good a description personally as Gen X, though. Well, maybe that, yeah, maybe from like 1958 onward is not the baby boom anymore, it's the baby bust. That's, I kind of like that. Thanks, Jack. Okay, let's run over and check in on the phones, because I don't need to be filibobstering all the way through through the program. Filibobstering, see how easy? I do it to myself, so don't feel bad. Yo, Todd.
Oh, that was funny.
Which part?
Just you know, when you've been doing something for, you know, what you just said, filibobstering, but it's filibobstering. So. Or lobstering, however you want to look at it. Who knows? But listen, Ron cracked me up. He said, if I'm a pessimist, what is Steve? What is it? Oh my God, that's the truth.
I know. And look, we're all subject to it. What's that one Australian comedian who says, some days we all get sad, and that's in a rant about guns.
I'm curious about something here.
Do ask.
Okay. Many of us have friends who are Republicans, right?
It happens.
I mean, they're humans. They have, you know, they're bipedal. They're okay.
They break the eight.
At this point, what do they stand for?
At this point, the cruelty is the point. The cruelty is at the core of MAGA-try. And I suggest you give up on the term Republican. Because this is, look, Adam Kinzinger and Daddy's Little Deferment, Dick and a Wig Cheney, do not constitute a political party. They're outcasts. They're in the wilderness. They may as well be independents. Because, they almost have no, whatever Republican constituency they have is a distinct minority from the maggot cult. The Republican Party is the maggot cult. The maggot cult is the Republican Party. I mean, this is, what was that, the transformative property of addition or something? 2 + 1 is the same as 1 + 2? Whatever it was. You see the point, right?
Well, I do, and that was one of the memes this morning. I took a break from Morning Joe for a while, and I tuned in today, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah?
I thought it was a good program. It was a good program today.
Well, apparently that little revelation from Bob Costa carried some weight, that he was literally outside the Willard Hotel and banging on the door on the night of the 5th while they were plotting the insurrection. Damn.
You know? And, right, he's no joke. He doesn't report something that's just speculation. He's pretty solid. You know, you mean people might not like him, you know.
No, my, and you know, he kind of addressed the issue that I've raised from time to time, Todd, and that is, you know, when you've got all this breaking news, whatever happened to you, if you see something, say something. You know what I mean?
I do.
And so, you know, they were finding this stuff out, and it was like, well, we can't tell anybody because then we won't sell a shit ton of books. And remember, the whole purpose of this exercise is to make a shit ton of money.
See, now you're touching on, I think, what is ruining our country right now. That's one of the main, it's greed.
Avarice?
It's greed.
Cupidity?
Avarice. Yep. You know. I mean, I really believe there's a whole group of people now are like, you know, they understand the game, and they're like, we need to get as much money as we can, as fast as we can, like these other people, because this train is not going to stop. So you better get your financial shit together now before shit hits the fan. And that's across parties. You know, there are people who think like that. But, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like, you know, that's for the common good. Fuck your sales. You know, you need to report what happened. It's
but, of course, what he – and maybe some people are saying that because the pull quote that I had from him was that, of course, you don't understand these things when you're standing there living them in the present. You have to wait for all of this stuff to percolate and sort of build its own neural – net or pathway.
Not in that case. I disagree.
Well, and that's the nature of my inquiry.
In that instance, now the instance. And I'm not trying to get off. You know, I'm trying to stay focused here. But let's take the shooting incident on the movie set. I can understand the mind that. Honestly, when you're doing an ongoing investigation, you shouldn't be talking about anything. And, you know, you get in trouble if you start releasing information and you're not quite sure yet. It takes a while. You have to interview a lot of people. And, I mean, that's the flip side because, you know, people are harping on why are they waiting until Wednesday. And they already, you know, let Alec Baldwin off the hook, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I can understand holding off until you have what you believe to be artifacts. I get that part. You understand what I mean? I mean, you
don't agree with
me. I'm just saying. Because we've gotten to the habit, we need to know now. But you know, an investigation is an investigation. It's an open investigation. But I don't want to get off on a tangent. But in the case we're talking about with the insurrection, you know, this is our country. My God, that is absolutely. I'm still upset. These people. I'm upset that these people are not upset. And I think some of these Republicans are, they're ashamed. But they're not ashamed enough to do the right thing.
I don't know how far I can go. I don't know how far down that little garden path I can go with you. I don't know that they're ashamed. I don't know that they can conceive shame. I don't know that they can feel it. I don't know that they think that there's anything to be ashamed of. I mean, Trump just tells it like it is. He just says right there what is on his mind. And if he says you're a shithole country, that's because you're a shithole country. Right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I know I'm generalizing. Maybe that's a straw man. But I've seen too many real-world examples of it. I mean, we got 700,000 people dead from a preventable virus pandemic. And his followers are still trying to get more people dead, many of whom are from their own. Now, when does the shame kick in? When does the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth kick in? Because I'm still waiting.
All right, to make your point, to bolster your point, I will say, remember how many people liked the fact that the last president refused to be contrite. They thought that was a strength.
Yeah, that meant he was a man. He's a real man, not one of them sissy men.
But you see, mature people understand that, you know, the best way is to admit your foibles and try to do better. Reflection, introspection, you know, but they're not, you know, that's not their, that's not how they operate.
No.
So, you know, and then they have the nerve to talk about Joe Biden might have dementia or Alzheimer's. And, you know, do they really want to go down that road? We had a like clearly a mentally ill president. Like, we don't even know what the shit that he probably was trying to do.
I mean, hamburgers, covfefe, hanging on to a general for grim death because he can barely walk, lives in fear of stairs and slopes, hung on to the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom for fear that he would fall and bust that ass. Drives his golf cart onto the green because he can't make the long walk from the cart path to the green in a state that has no fucking hills.
And then there's the drug abuse.
Credible report, yeah. You know, sometimes I wonder why more of the for-profit media, why anybody from the for-profit media didn't do more to shine a light on what Noel Kassler was talking about.
Right.
It's not a bit.
That's the thing. We have all this corroboration. Like, people who know, we could tell if you can tell if you're in that, have been in that type of lifestyle. But then, you know, it's so much. Okay, fine. We know that part. If you heard someone at work in a responsible position during the course of their duties, not at a cocktail party, but in, like, you know, we're having a meeting at 10, you know, that type of thing, and they declare themselves a stable genius.
I have the best words.
And he told us he was a snake on at least 3 occasions. How come this shit doesn't sink in? I just don't get it.
Well, I mean, you're asking for a majority of the people of the United States, and there's a fundamental intellectual disconnect. I mean, we use complex sentences and say things like, obviously the infrastructure of the United States is in a profound state of disrepair and badly in need of improvement and expansion. Then on the other side, you know, Jim Jacket Off Jordan says, duty head. How do you have a meaningful dialogue with that person, people like that? Like the guy from Target in the clip at the beginning of the program, that moron.
Oh yeah, right.
How do you have a dialogue with him? They actually tried,
but he wasn't having it. That's what they shut. They mentally. I'm telling you.
You support the corporate propaganda, corporate Satanist propaganda, right. Sir. You can't say that in this store. Free speech. Call the cops. Okay.
Well,
but he was not willing to be persecuted for his Jesus' name's sake. Because he dropped the shirt and run when he found out the cops were on the way.
You know what? I'm starting to think that Jim Jordan was assaulted at a young age, because it seems like he's stunted.
Kind of does feel that way, doesn't it?
It does. I hate to say it, but now we've been looking at him, it's like, you know, at some point, you know, the decorum is not there. I mean, you're in it. Come on, man. You're running government. You're in the Congress. You have to do better than that in terms of your language. I don't care how you talk on the corner, but, you know, at work, come on.
Yeah.
And right, like Marjorie, you know, the green woman over there in Georgia. What the fuck is wrong with you? Something is wrong with her.
Undereducated and overprivileged.
We have to do better. But maybe this is who we are. That's the thing.
That's the don't go into the basement part of the film. Maybe this is who we are.
You know, right? Once again, it's the anti question. Like, why did 70 some odd million people vote for him? You know, and this is what I always ask my.
Well, I mean, physician, heal thyself. I mean, start ticking off a few reasons. I'll join in.
They like the message. Doesn't matter.
Okay, what is the message?
Hate the immigrants.
Everybody sucks but us.
Right. We're losing ground. You know who we're talking. You know who I'm talking about. I know it. You know it too. Right. You know who you're talking to. You know, this confirmation bias mixed with disinformation in the media, it's a cost.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because Emery and Marvel, you say, yeah, hit him again. I can put a little stank on it. Whoo, I love it when he's mean.
Yeah.
Emery, it gets me all tingly. They get off on it. They get off on the cruelty.
You know. Oh, my God. So okay. So, flashback, like, close to when I first moved here, we had, you remember, it was here in the South Carolina State Legislature. They were cheering people dying, like, take away the insurance, let them die. And they were cheering. Oh, yeah, yeah. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. What do you want us to do? Let them die in the hallways? Yeah! It's Ron Paul asked that in, I think, New Hampshire in 2012.
Mm-hmm. So, I guess, you know, this is what, I don't know, this is going to be an interesting election year. Let's see what happens. But they just need to get off of Biden's back. My God, look at all the crap he's had to deal with. You know, our government has been dismantled. You know, there's a reason that we can't process the folks from Afghanistan, because, you know, the last guy, he fired a bunch of federal workers.
And you know, Steve Miller busted ass to, again, there's that phrase, to make sure that we couldn't. Because he damn sure didn't, he and his boss didn't want them here. Because, you know, they're not white, they're not Christian, they might not vote Republican if they ever become, because we don't have them, we don't want them having getting citizenship and shit.
Which I think is misguided, because remember, most of them are Catholic and they're fairly conservative. I wouldn't make that assumption at all, that they're just going to vote Democrat. I wouldn't make that assumption.
Afghans?
No, I'm talking about the, like, people coming from South America.
It's not a gimme. It's by no means is that a
I don't know what to say about folks from Afghanistan. I really, I don't know. I only met a few people from there. But they seem to be conservative, kind of. the ones that I've met, but that's, you know, it's anecdotal. I don't know. Oh, so sad. We have to do better. This is, and you know, I don't know why people are comfortable with this. This is no way for us to be living. This is bullshit.
Well, you know, down the road, and it'll probably be after Joe Manchin is no longer a going concern. But he will be the answer to a history essay question. Why did everything go to shit in the United States in the mid 21st century? And the answer is going to be Joe Manchin.
Isn't that interesting?
So Joe will probably be off to his long home, but Joey will probably still be around, and so will Heather. Yeah, that was Dad. My God, he fucked America, but he left a shit pot of money to us. Ew-wee! We're never going to go hungry again.
See, we're back to the greed. Because, I mean, everyone knows that he's been taking money from the coal companies and the energy companies, and he has no interest in the Green New Deal or, you know, moving forward. That's not where his bread is buttered. It's out there. It's just common knowledge now. So I just don't understand it. I mean, my God, the planet, look at how hot it's getting. It's like we're about to burn the fuck up. You know what? I think we're in dystopia, but we don't know it yet. I mean, like,
well, yeah, that's reminiscent of something I used to say years ago, back as far back as maybe the, you know, the dim leader regime. They don't put up a blinking neon sign that says, empire going out of business, everything must go. Nor do they put up signs that say, welcome to dystopia. You only thought you weren't there yet. You're soaking in it.
Well, that's a cowbell.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, look at this thing that just blew through where Sparky is. An atmospheric river. The biggest one such in the history of that region.
Mm. Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Isn't he near Oroville where that fucked up dam is?
Not that close, no.
Not that close. Okay. Well, I hope you know about that messed up dam in Oroville.
Yeah.
Out there. That could be a mess. Yeah, I don't know, man. This weather's all weird. And I had another question about, you know, there's a nice documentary on PBS now about Hearst, Randolph Hearst. You know, and unless people are really into history, they don't understand how he helped shape American policy. But it made me think. I wonder if Patty Hearst, because that was when we were growing up, you know, with the Symbionese Liberation Army and all that kind of stuff. Now, I wonder if she found out the history of her grandfather and that kind of turned her off.
Possibly.
You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
Because those, the quote-unquote kidnappers or, you know, her accomplices, you know, they were, you know, it was a mixed group of folk. And Randolph Hearst was a, you know, consummate racist. And I don't know, that just dawned on me when I was watching. But that's because, you know, it's interesting. I never get tired of watching Citizen Kane. That was just a great movie.
Oh, it is. And there's another movie about, God damn it. What was his name? Writing the script. For Citizen Kane.
Yes, that was on Netflix last year. The first time I saw it, it's Sepia. Oh, I forget. Right. That shit was. See, but people wouldn't get it. You might not get it until you watch Citizen Kane a couple times. That motherfucker had liquor. He had trunks of liquor. He was supposed to be dry. And he had trunks of liquor delivered to his room. They had that.
Yeah, to keep him writing. I don't know.
To keep him writing. Right. That I can't remember the name. I can't recall the name of the movie right now. But, yeah, that shit was off the chain. I knew it was going to get awards. The first time I saw it, I was like, oh, this is going to be classic. God, somebody knows the name. Maybe Ron and Rowling knows, but that daggone movie.
Mm. Yeah.
That sounds like stainless steel.
It is stainless steel.
It has a particular sound.
Yeah, that's my water bottle.
That's nice.
It's not as highfalutin and bougie as a hydro flask. But it's
hydro.
Yeah. I caught them on sale a couple of years ago and bought a bunch of them. They were going for like $5 a piece.
Are they like the insulated?
Kind of, a little bit. It'll keep a liter of iced water for, you know, the better part of the day. Because I drink a little bit of decaf and almost no pop at all, no caffeine, and mostly water. You know, I've adopted that general Jack D. Ripper approach, you know, from Dr. Strangelove. Mandrake, bring me a rainwater and grain alcohol and get whatever it is that you limeys drink.
You know, that was on T. Turner about 5 months. That's a crazy, that movie must have just shocked people back in, you know, because that was in the early 60s, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That must have freaked people the fuck out.
I'm sure I can talk.
Oh, we're going to drop this bomb. This dude's riding a fucking bomb and shit. Oh, God. Well, anywho, I'm sure people, I just wanted to, like, I just don't understand where we are, where we're going, because this train is moving, man. These people, they're going to get what they want by hook or crook.
Well, they are, and I got a note from our dear sister Jude. What is the message? They appear to manifest all their inner wrongs, inner brokenness, inner failures, and yes, an inner contempt, as they've been given permission by example. So we're left with having to manage from the outside this cauldron. What a great turn of phrase. This cauldron of dangerous dysfunction. Good thing the horn allows us this critical forum to verbalize, listen, and renew. Thanks to all, Jude. Thank you, Jude. That's a beautiful phrase. This cauldron of dangerous dysfunction. Because it is. And you can, you know, it conjures. You know, cauldron conjures. Because it's that time of year. But you can see it with the fire under it and the cauldron and the hot glowing iron and you can hear the bloop, 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 bloop.
It's bubbling. That's it. Like the La Brea tar pits.
Yeah. And the danger and the dysfunction and the casual cruelty are all just, you know, simmering, boiling away in the pot. And every now and then Nitwit Nero comes over with his orange pumpkin head and puts it that it's like a big ore in it and stirs it. Because we've got all of that for making apple butter here. And there's a stirring rod, and it's a good 8 feet long, real sturdy stick, and there's a paddle attached to it. Because when you're making apple butter, you have to keep that applesauce moving, or it'll stick.
Really?
You can't stop. Somebody has to be stirring the whole time. And that's how it goes from looking like applesauce to that beautiful brick kind of color that it has. But, you know, and so in this case, this, I don't know, crab applesauce of maggot, wow, maggotry. And they just and he just stands there with his orange pumpkin head, stirring and stirring and stirring until it gets darker and darker and more toxic and more concentrated. Mm. Yeah, by the way, yes, thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Ron knew the movie was Mank.
Mankiewicz, that's it. But please, anyone who's
yeah, Kevin watch, said, really yep, Mank. Yep.
Yep. Yep. I don't even, I guess it's still on Netflix, but the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, this is a classic. This is it. And once again, you know, you might want to watch Citizen Kane a couple of times before you watch it so you understand the context. But that, and I couldn't believe, like, well, one time we talked and you were talking about, I don't know, we were talking about movies, but I can't believe you saw The Rat King.
Huh?
Rat King, R-A-T-K-I-N-G. It's like a Philippine prison camp. during World War II.
Oh, yeah.
And, George Segal, or Segal, however you want to say it.
No, it's George Segal. Segal.
Yeah. That shit, oh, God, that was great. But so many movies. Anyway, I guess, but I like the picture you painted about the cauldron. That's a great word, you know, because the MILF, the mentally ill fascist, the last guy, you know, he's like a walking cauldron of pathology, and people love it. So, once again, you know, who does that make us? It's just, it's awful. And, you know, because he's popular where I live. I mean, there's no way around that. They don't understand why he's not still president. And I'm like, well, you know he's mentally ill, right? Well, why are you picking on him? I'm like, well, maybe mentally ill people shouldn't be president. You know, did you think about that? What do you know? Well, maybe I know more than you, motherfucker. You know, come on.
You know what? I've done my own research.
We're on the internet. That's right, goddammit.
I got Google just like anybody else. I'm as smart as a medical doctor, scientist, biochemist, egghead, pointy-headed intellectual, scientist. Damn, Skippy.
Oh man, we're in a bad way. You know, we're in a bad now. All of a sudden, the mask. Something's wrong with the mask. When we're a mask, like people, they figured that shit out in World War I, 1915. So, but that's where they want to take us, man. It's just, you know, no more tenure. We can't stand the professors, and that's where we are. But maybe other people want to talk with you. And I just, you know, are you nervous about, you know,
about what's coming up?
Yeah,
I'm not. I'm not nervous about the surgery. I'm not scared. I've reached this place of peace and happiness. You know, this isn't like, you know, I was in a horrible car wreck and had to be pulled out with the jaws of life and rushed by a helicopter and they're desperately trying to save my life. They're trying to save my life, but this is something I want. This is something I've wanted for half a century. Dreamed of from the first moment that I knew it was possible. Thought it would never happen.
Well, you feel free then.
So I have an eager sense of anticipation. Nervous in terms of leaving here and all the things that can go wrong here and maintaining basically two households at the same time that I'm unable to do this, and which makes that possible. Yes, most assuredly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be nice, and I'm not complaining. You know, when I don't have this to do, I kind of freak out because, you know, I you know, this is an interchange of ideas and communication and goodwill. And I miss it when I'm not doing it. I mean, that's why I don't take many nights off. I have to be off on Wednesday. I would rather not be off on Wednesday. But this is very important. That having been said, yeah, the logistics of pulling all, because, you know, how do you pack to be gone for 6 to 12 weeks? I mean, I did that 2 years ago for the play that I went and did in my dear friend Kyle's memory. And that was just a matter of, you know, taking my regular clothes and, but in this case, there's more calculations. There's more stuff. I'm taking the road rig, taking a tripod, taking a camera, taking a roadcaster. And
are you keeping a diary?
I don't know. I'm taking my nice fountain pens in the hope that I may.
Like calligraphy tip.
No, it's just a regular fine point fountain pen, but I love fountain pens. I absolutely love them. They just feel better to write with. Feel like you're doing something. But you know, like I said, some point this week I got to have the tires rotated. I got to change, get the oil changed.
Man, that's a, you know.
There's so much to be done. And then Monday...
You're probably not going to be able to sleep.
And then, you know, the plan is to be out of here like 5 o'clock in the morning on Monday next week.
And down in Alabama.
Yeah. And what I was going to say a minute ago is I miss this when I'm not here, but under these circumstances, it would be nice to just be able to say, you know, I'm going to be off air for a little while and not sit there and fret and worry. But that's what I do. So hopefully I'll be out of it enough that I won't be fretting and worrying.
See, that's kind of, right.
And I'm told that for the first 5 days, I will pretty much be out of it.
So you'd be gone for at least a week.
Yeah, I know. But I'm talking to somebody about doing some fill-in work so that there won't be dead air, because I love this community and we have a lot of affection for each other. And I just hope it will be here when I get back.
That's right.
And that my numbers will not have just fallen through the floor. It's like, you know, because out of sight, out of mind.
But see, you're weighing your existence against,
Yeah, I'm weighing one form of it against another. Hey, let me do one thing here. Jude chimed in. Are you there, Jude?
I am.
So I wanted to make sure that I didn't screw up and forget that I had somebody on the stress line, because I've done that a few times and it's just terribly embarrassing.
Hi, Jude.
Welcome.
Hi, Todd. Hi, Robin. Well, first of all, Todd, that was a perfectly beautiful segue in which you asked Robin, you know, how she was doing. Because I called in not knowing what I was going to say, because I felt I had to call. But Robin, you have been just so tucked into my heart. And I wanted to kind of explore a little bit more with you when you mentioned about how you had a sense of like a peace. What are you doing? What kinds of things are you doing, if I may ask, to be in that place?
Not a lot. I go for walks in the woods. Yesterday, I posted about it on Facebook. It sort of dawned on me, it was a beautiful day, breathtakingly beautiful autumn day here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got dressed and did my hair and makeup and hiked out into the woods and went to the canyon rim and just stood and marveled at it, because I didn't want to not go and see it in its autumnal splendor before I left, because I owe this place my regards, because I love it so. And it was just kind of a way of saying, you know, not goodbye, but, you know, till I get home, till I get back. I'm overwhelmed by the enormity of what this is.
Yes.
And I know that I can intellectualize the difficulties that will be attendant upon it, but they are difficulties that it is a challenge that I wish to face and I wish to meet. And so there is a sort of peace to it. There is a sense of happy determination and the hope that at the other end of this process, a better life awaits.
Yes.
And there will be lots more work to be done, spiritually and physically. More fights with the insurance companies, bastards. God, I hate them, Jude. I do. I know hate is a toxic emotion, but I do. I hate them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they made a contract with me and then they tried to violate it, and they are still trying to violate it, because they know, quite simply, they can. I've sat and thought and thought and thought and thought, and I realized that you cannot plan for everything, but Agnes and I have sat and talked, and she has absolute expertise in what she is going to do and be doing.
Yeah.
To take care of me. And I'm so fortunate in that regard. And for what, you know, and for my part, you know, I love a good road trip. And traveling with her is going to be an absolute delight. Because when we travel together, we have a really, really good time.
Well, if I may ask you, when you talked about hate, you know, hating the insurance company, how does that feel inside of you? What's that like for you?
Rage, fury, awful thoughts.
Yeah.
I want to know who that quack doctor is that thinks that there's an outpatient vaginoplasty out there somewhere. And I want to talk to him. And while I would try to maintain my composure, I'm sure at some point in time I would probably call him a duty head. I would ask him what it feels like to cash a check every couple of weeks that he gets in exchange for hurting people and making people want to die. How much is that worth? What can you buy with it?
Well, you know, I wanted to go back to what Todd, when he had asked you about if you were journaling at all, you know, because the last time the three of us were on, you read that beautiful poem that you'd written when you were outside, and Todd, you had even mentioned, because I was the one that kind of overspoke you, you talked about how you were beginning to write again, because it was about that legal pad and pen. I mean, there's just so much, but I have to stop for a second, Robin. I have such, I just send out such overwhelming protection and care and love for you. And I'm hoping that that's, you know, a small aspect of maybe where you're residing right now. And that understanding about life and death, that's a real hard concept. I mean, I understand it because of the work I've done with people and having to, you know, be present to that, but to be able to enfold within yourself, knowing that this is your destiny, where you're to go. Todd, you mentioned earlier about freedom. But there is such, you know, that's what I'm hearing, such a sense of freedom. And that can't be taken away. That just can't be taken away. And that earlier when you were playing that audio of that fellow that was trying to confront, you know, the people in the store, and then I thought about all that dysfunction that they hold within inside of themselves. You know, at times it challenges us to have to stand up and look at different ways in which we can be in ourselves, not being able to impact them, but grow in our own personal strength collectively, you know, throughout the, you know, the community, families, and country. So, I'm grateful that, you know, that you opened up and shared about that, because this is no minor thing at all. I mean, just the physical aspect of the surgery, I mean, it really pierces me. It really pierces me.
The thing, if I'm nervous about anything, it is that sense of waiting for the other shoe to drop, because I have to be so careful, because there's a pandemic on. And it's a war inside that hospital every day. And I have to stay clean. Agnes and I will go and get a test, I think probably Friday. Make sure that we're COVID-free leaving. And then while we're down there, we've got to stay that way. Be super careful. Gloves, masks, the works. Then on the 5th, I've said this, on the 5th, I have my pre-op and my consult with my surgeon, and that's a Friday. And then on Sunday, I get COVID tested again and come and go back to where we're living and just kind of cave up and work on things I can work on. And then on Monday, I've got all the pre-op, and anybody who's ever had surgery probably has a pretty good idea of what's involved. And then the balloon goes up on Tuesday. It's going to be a little bit rough because most people know that Tuesdays are shot day for me. You know, I go and get my estrogen injection. Well, because, and it's probably not necessary, but it is still a protocol that for this surgery, I have to be off of estrogen for 2 weeks. And so that means I'm going to go through a little mini menopause.
That's what I was going to say.
And that's going to be gross.
That's going to throw you off.
That will probably, affect my bliss a little bit. I hope I don't wind up going backwards. I hope processes that have begun don't stop processing. And I think it'll be a week after surgery before I can go back on. And so that's almost a month, having been on estrogen for, in excess of a year now, to one degree or another, that's going to be rough because I remember what it was like, you know, if scientifically or biochemically, if, you know, whatever your dominant sex hormone is, if it's at appropriate levels, you feel good. If it is not, you feel bad. And so in my case, I will have, you know, suppressed, all of it will be suppressed. My estrogen will fall back to guy levels, which is gross. And my testosterone will probably start climbing again, which is even grosser. It'll be like being locked back into the emotional shackles that they kept, that it kept me in for the better part of a half a century. It'll be, in a way, like going back into the closet. And it's just, that's the worst part of this entire thing. And it's worrisome. And I hope I'm not just, like, miserable. But my attitude is good. And if I know that it's coming, I can be aware of it and be okay.
Yes.
That's at least the way that I'm looking at it.
And you must have numerous other people that you can talk with. I mean, obviously you have, you know, Annette. I mean, other people in the community that, you know, that you talk on the phone with, you know, good friends.
Yeah.
Well, that's excellent.
And, you know, I will be keeping in touch, and I'll be sharing my wider journey. I just had an email. Why not an email list instead of Facebook? I've never understood the appeal of Facebook, but especially now with new revelations of their evil ways coming every day, yet good people like the Horn community stick with it and seemingly ignore the algorithmic cesspool and privacy nightmare that is that platform. An email list offers privacy, no algorithms, and can be used to send pics, video, group chat, pretty much all the things. No, I'm not offering to run an email list, ha ha ha, but I bet someone in the community would. Well, there's only one problem. I don't communicate only with the Horn community. I communicate much more broadly than that. And that's the reason it's as successful as it is. It's easy to use, and it's there for just about anybody who wants it. So I'll be staying in touch. All social media is evil, I guess. But it depends on how you use it. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Todd, I just want you to know that my meager contribution this evening was dedicated to you. I don't know if Robin said that or not, but it was.
Well, I don't know if you thought. No, I just know that I won't become too insane. That's a joke. I mean, you guys always, you know, chastise me, I mean, lovingly, for not getting jokes.
No, I hear. Go ahead.
I want to take you back to our last conversation when you went on about, I sent Robin an email, because you had, Todd, you had phrased a question to me at the beginning of it, and you said, you know, Judy says that you, I've missed my, I can't remember how many weeks of my Ebonics. And then the both of you went back and forth, and then I entered wanting to know it, and then Robin said, it's a bit. But I think there was a question in the beginning of that. And maybe it's too long ago then.
No, continue.
Well, no, I was just asking Todd if he remembered when he was gonna, when he was posing that question to me, that he had missed, you know, the, and someone was calling. And I mean, you went on so wonderfully with each other. It was such a delightful conversation. It was so fun to laugh, you know, just to laugh. So that kind of just, I just was wondering, Todd, if you had remembered what it was that you wanted to.
I'm thinking, but I don't know because, you know, we talk about so many different things on so many different levels. Some is silly, some is very serious. But, you know, I honestly, I really feel like Robin and I have a really good rapport because.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
It comes through, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And all the, you know, everyone that calls into the horn, even if it doesn't seem, there was a, there's a fellow that calls in that talks about college basketball or college football. And you guys go on back and forth. Steve, yeah. And, you know, it takes me back, well, the last time, it took me back to when the University of Washington and the Huskies. And I'm listening to the two of you, and I'm back in the stadium, and I can kind of sense the snow around me and the excitement and, you know, just the jugs of cocoa or coffee or whatever we bring, even though I'm not a football fan, you know. So it's
spectacle unlike any other, and there can be this just sense of joy. I mean, it's the power of crowd dynamics is on display at a packed college football game, and it can be an uplifting experience, or you know, it can, if you're a Mountaineer fan, it's a shared grief experience of you know, watching another lead dissolve and snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, because you know God made West Virginia football to train the faithful. And that's a Dune reference.
You could throw batteries at Santa Claus.
No, we don't do the batteries thing. But I did see a guy hit Dan Marino in the ear hole of his pit helmet one time with a hot dog. I mean, it was like a guided missile.
You're kidding.
Ketchup and mustard went everywhere. Because Pitt sucks. Sorry. I mean, I'm morally obligated to say that, even though we don't get to play. Well, yeah, I think we get to play. But anyway, the other thing is you can see, I mean, you can feel in that transmitted emotion how a demagogue could whip a crowd into a frenzy. And yeah. So, you know, the same thing applies when you're watching Nitwit Nero hold one of his Clavering rallies. I love that phrase from Pink Floyd's The Wall in one of the songs, the warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow.
Mm.
And that's the same song where Pink sings, "Are there any queers in the theater tonight? Get them up against the wall."
Mm.
And that's what Nitwit Nero does. So you can, yeah, it runs in both directions. But it's a delightful, Jude. It's a delightful spectacle. And in point of fact, Steve and I were texting back and forth over the weekend, Saturdays, because college football. And you know, we were talking about the Ohio State University pasting Indiana, and we were talking about the whipping that Alabama put on Tennessee. Tennessee's getting better, but that was not a fair fight. And I was sitting there in stunned amazement watching my beloved Mountaineers go to 3-4 against the one team I didn't want them. I mean, I always root for my beloved Mountaineers, but our dear friend Joy in Ann Arbor is a proud daughter of Texas Christian University. And that's who we played on Saturday. And after the pasting we got put on us by Baylor 2 weeks before, I thoroughly expected us to go in and just stink up the place because it was a road game. And I'm talking about college football, and people are going, okay, well, we can turn away from this program. But they didn't. They dug deep. They held. They intercepted. They got a couple of interceptions. And they did not lose. And Joy wrote and said, congratulations. I said, I feel terrible about this. We're almost playing 500 ball, but I don't know if we're going to get those 6 wins necessary to go to the Dow Chemical Tidy Bowl that we need.
Well, you know, as I'm listening to you right now, it reminds me, and I hope you'll understand it, but it reminds me of, remember when every season they used to have the Peanuts movies on TV, like Christmas and Halloween?
Yeah.
And when the parents would talk, or the adults would talk, it was kind of a muffled kind of the specifics of what you were sharing, because I was coming from a different perspective in terms of the Steve calling in and you guys sharing about, you know, the college football. I was coming to the, you know, in reference going back to Todd and the sharing that is so unique to the two of you. I mean, it's so unique. And yet there's other aspects, but it's being able to listen and embrace all the different parts of people when we might not necessarily feel connected, but if we are disciplined enough and care about ourselves as a community, we can really work our way through that. Each sharing becomes something really important, and if that makes sense, because that's what, it's not that I'm into college football at all, but it was wonderful to have an experience of something that I'm not really interested in, and yet take me back, and I could still be, you know, connected during that dialogue that you and Steve had. So, Todd, can you help a gal out?
Listen, I'm glad you asked me, because honestly, you painted such a wonderful picture of what it's like to be at a college football game. You know, like, I guess, you know, before 9-1-1, you know, people of Robbins and I age, you know, the smells, the food, the camaraderie, there's nothing like it. you know what I mean?
No, Robin? It's kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I just got a note from Scary Jerry. Football is stupid. Signed, beleaguered and delusional Miami Dolphins and University of Miami Hurricanes fan. Carry on, program people. Yeah. Football stupid. Yeah. No, I get that.
I hope he's not on the bus.
Last time he was trying to catch, he was literally trying to catch one. Come back, Shane, come back.
I know that feeling. Oh, Jude, honest to God, obviously, I can tell you've done some counseling. I can tell, Jude. But I'm concerned about Robin. This is like a rat. This is serious surgery. How in the hell could it be 2 days? What about infection?
Well, I think I kind of figured that out, Todd. This is a different technique, because it uses the Da Vinci robot. They blow you up with gas, I guess inert nitrogen gas or something. And they go in through your belly button, and they work from both ends toward the middle, as it were. And that technique requires a week in the hospital, because you've got to recover both from the surgical insult down there and the surgical insult from higher up toward it. Whereas the traditional PIV technique just does all the work down there. And in that one, people who do PIV are generally sent home after 2 days in the hospital with the dressing still on, the catheter still in, and the packing still in.
So you're saying they don't recognize the fact that you're having the robotic surgery?
That's what I could figure. So, you know, with this, I have to be in there. And frankly, I would rather be in the hospital the whole time that I've got the packing and the catheter in, because the way they work it, the way they work it this way is that on day five, they pull the catheter, and that is apparently a real event. And by that, I mean awful. And then they take the packing out. And that, too, is said to be at least weird and uncomfortable. And then they will send my happy ass to physical therapy to learn how to open and keep open my new genitalia.
Wow!
I'm trying to do this gently so that everybody else who's so tired of hearing about this are not going to go, oh yuck, there went dinner in the mountain daylight time zone.
No, you've never talked. This is like the quintessential core of Robin. We all love you and embrace you. I mean, when you get on the other side of this, you're going to be like a triathlon. I mean, watch out, world. I mean, watch out, because the power that you have now. Oh, without a Todd, right? Without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
And That's what I'm thinking.
That's like, well, you know, our dear friend Clarity went through this a year ago. And so she knows, probably not listening, but she knows everything I'm talking about.
What a beautiful name.
Oh, it is. And she's a beautiful person. And certainly, Cynthia in the Bay Area knows what I'm talking about. Terry has been such a kind and sweet and loving and gracious mentor and big sister to me, to helping me, you know, just because, you know, I'll call and go, what the fuck am I doing? It's okay. Get off the ledge. You're going to be okay, girl. And it's just wonderful. But, like, the business of dilation is four times a day for 15 minutes at a time. Literally.
Wow.
Get up in the morning. Do that for 15 minutes. Don't sneeze or you'll shoot the dilator across the room. That really happens. And then, you know, noon, do it again, 6 o'clock, do it again, before bedtime, do it again. And that's every day of my life for the next year. And in the early part of the process, do it oh so carefully, because this one potential horror was brought to my attention. And that is, you know, there's a lot of sutures down there and you have to
a year.
Well, actually, for the rest of your life, but it lightens up after a while. And it's
It reminds me of, what? Listening to you right now? This is going to maybe sound different. It's like you're giving birth to yourself.
Yeah, in a way. In a way, that makes sense. But you know, in the earliest part of it, when everything is still kind of raw and sewn together, and before the healing has fully taken place, I was warned that, you know, you have to learn how to do this competently or else you can screw up and think that you're putting it one place when you're actually sticking it between a couple of sutures and tear yourself open.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to be real careful.
Look, urinary tract infection, that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, those are a thing.
I was thinking about...
I'm sorry, Jude. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. It just instantly took me back into all the times that I'd have to catheterize someone, and sometimes not even, you know, having no visual, but having to, you know, I've used that word, be intuitive. Yeah, that's a whole, wow. So let me ask you, Robin, sharing all of this right now, how do you feel right now?
Oh, I mean, I have some apprehension. But I have zero. I have zero about the surgery itself.
Mm-hmm.
Afterward, I'm not going to move real well. I'm not going to be able to bend over. I'm not going to be able to pick anything up. I'm not going to be able to sit down. You know, one of the realities is I will not be able to drive home for at least 6 weeks. And, you know, for the first month, probably not be able to drive at all.
Damn.
And, you know, there's and you know, Agnes is going to be, I mean, she will be a fantastic caregiver.
You look, you are so lucky she's a nurse.
Yeah, and I will be, you know, I'll be, I will try really, really hard not to be, you know, a petulant little diva twit. But I'm sure I'm going to do, I'm sure I will do some pissing and moaning. It's almost impossible not. But my sincerest hope is, and Terry has told me she did, you know, they're really, after, you know, after the earliest parts of it, there's really not that much pain. It's more like discomfort. It's more like annoyance. And
why is, and what, how did you hear that? Did someone tell you it's more of an annoyance?
Well, no, I mean, I've seen a lot of varied opinions of, you know, how painful it is and everything. But I have endured some pain in my life, and I didn't like it, but I handled it reasonably well. So I'm hoping that since I've got something to compare this to, for instance, my dear friend Terry said, oh, no, impacted wisdom teeth are a lot worse than this. That hurts.
Wow. Wow.
And so I'm thinking pancreatitis. Did I went? Yeah. I'm hoping that that will be, that'll provide some sort of a benchmark, and I'll be able to look up and go, oh, no, this isn't so bad. Because it's like, you know, after months and months of electrolysis, which was really painful, you know, one little awful second at a time. You know, I went and got a...
Wait a minute.
What?
They told me electrolysis was painless. That was the whole thing.
Well, somebody lied to you.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, and speaking, you know, speaking of pain, Dave number 11 just reminded me, you know, when he was on Friday on the front porch, our dear friend John Bridevo told us about what happened to him when he separated two dogs that were fighting, one of which was a pit bull.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And we finally talked him into going to the hospital. And the first picture that I saw that he posted on Facebook was like, God damn, John, did they get a finger? And he kindly, with the bandages off, reposted a picture. So, no, he's got all of his digits. But he's got this massive slash down the middle of the back of his left hand that has been stitched up. And it's like, oh, I know that hurt a lot.
When did this happen?
Friday. Before airtime.
Yeah, go on.
And eventually he said, yeah, I'm going to leave because I'm getting a lot of blood out of this. And so the whole community was like, get thee to a hospital, John Bridevo.
Yeah. I remember him saying something about packing or bandages or something. Okay.
Yeah. So they, his family was not going to put up with any of his heroic, his heroism. He's like, no, you're going to the hospital. You're going to go get this car, get this taken care of. And so, you know, I saw
what
that
was the outcome?
Well, I mean, the dogs are okay. They were just fighting over food or something. But the one dog got a purchase on the neck of the other, and that's when you know that's when nature takes over from nurture. And John had to separate them. Although I did see a remedy for that, and I don't know that it works, but it sounds like it would be worth a try next time. And I hope John does. That when that happens, you grab the box of black pepper.
Oh.
And you just dump it right on the critters' noses, and that shit will end in a hurry. Because they can't breathe for being agitated by the black pepper. That sounds cruel, but it's not nearly as cruel as, you know, letting one chew through the neck of the other or getting your hand laid open. So, but yeah, all of that. Thank you for the reminder, Dave number 11. But, you know, there's some apprehension that goes with all of that. But I do know that the two worst days of pain, day one and day two, will mostly be covered by the epidural, the spinal wearing off. And they will be generous with the pain medication and ibuprofen.
Good.
And I'm not worried.
And heavy and And heavy on stool softener. Heavy on stool softener.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm hoping not. I'm hoping just, yeah, just everything's going to be cleaned out and there's going to, yeah. Because, yeah, that's going to be part of my life.
Well, see, we used to, when in hospice, there was a second thing that we'd use with each other when we kind of were, you know, we'd go out and to, you know, meet our patients, but bowels are us. And that was a huge, huge piece of it because of the narcotics slowing everything down. I mean, you're aware of that, and maybe that's ridiculous to offer, but I don't think so. I think it's really very important.
Oh, no, I've already bought them.
Okay, good, good. Well, I have to stop you there for a second and take you back. And I think it was the interchange we were having about water of the womb.
Oh, the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb.
Okay, so I want to just kind of go back there for a second. When you had, I had never heard that phrase before, and it took me immediately back into my, into, you know, my womanness, my feminine self. And at that second, I aligned immediately because it was not too long after that horrendous bill was passed in Texas about the abortion. It took me right back instantly. You know, it did. Right back into the soil, you know, because we've, you know, the boots have been all over. And you went on then about the covenant of the blood. And at the end of it, it sounded like I was, that I had no comprehension. I actually did, but it was one of those moments that you ended up sounding like you were down in a tunnel. And at that moment, it was, there's so many aspects of that that I have to walk through. And I wanted to clarify that with you because I have, you know, I have a huge portion of my family that that is so distant and removed. And it's kind of it's such an oxymoron because I look at and try to live a life, you know, that brings, you know, goodness and wholeness, even in the fractured moments. But I don't know.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be, if I recall that conversation correctly, I didn't mean to be directing it, you know, specifically at you. But a lot of people just hear the short form of that, blood is thicker than water, and they think it actually means that family is more important than non-kin.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And that's
absolutely.
That is a mistaken interpretation of that phrase. Oddly enough, Agnes and I were talking about the very thing earlier today. The blood of the covenant, namely, you know, the shedding and mixing of blood in the olden form, you know, where you slash the palm and you shake hands and all that shit. But the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb actually means the exact opposite. It means that those associations that we make by choice and which we commit and which we commit to by bonds that are whatever sacred means are more important than the accident of birth.
And see, Todd immediately, you immediately identified that. But see, I was held in a suspension about water of the womb. And in, you know, when people are together conversing and we're looking at each other, although I think our dialogue has now kind of gotten its own kind of flow to it. So I'm feeling very comfortable and easy with, you know, with that.
I'm glad.
It's only what taken me 15 years. A little slow in the uptake here, but yes.
Jude and Robin, I have to get this off my chest because I cannot think about it too much because it really upsets me. This whole bounty thing in Texas with. It's like East German citizen spies, you know, oh, you're going to have an abortion. I'm going to get $10,000 off your head. What in the hell is that shit about? What the fuck is wrong with these people? Oh, my God. I can't believe that. That's how upset I am.
Well, what they did, they saw what was done. I mean, I'm speculating here, but this makes sense as a hypothesis to me. They saw what was done to Randall Terry, a horrible human being. At the time, he may somewhat have repented a little. I don't think fully. But he was doing horrible things to women who were trying to access reproductive health care. And they sued him into non-existence. And the same had also been done to the Klan. And so instead of learning the lesson, don't be assholes to other people, which is the lesson that should have been conveyed, these fetus fetishists instead learned the lesson of, hey, let's take these tactics and turn them to our own nefarious ends. You know, which is the sign of a bad brain, a broken brain.
Mm-hmm.
See, all right, I have to spit this out because you know I'm tangent, man. Jude, I like what you were saying earlier when you were talking about people walking around with all this dysfunction and discord in their minds. And it just clicked. I could almost see it, like the neurons popping in their brains. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, my God, they just keep getting worse. And mm-hmm. they're lost.
That's a kind of prescient statement. They're lost. And in the midst of that, you know, because I'm around it, I see it not a lot, and it always challenges me, since I can't change people, what is it inside of me that makes me stronger, more focused, more open, just within this teeny tiny vessel, you know? And I don't take any of those kinds of things lightly. It's a lot of work to be extremely disciplined. It's a lot of work. I mean, you know that. So,
Jude, some forms of theoretical physics say that it is possible in this universe for something to be bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
Oh my God! Yeah.
And you said this tiny vessel. I don't think there's much. I don't think you may present tinily. But you are great in spirit internally. You are vast.
Well, that's because I,
you are vast. You are ponderous in a good way. I have a question from Ron in Raleigh. And query, he writes. Take this question as intended. Yes, I really have been trying to practice over the last couple of years this concept, at least within, you know, within our community and within people I know to be of good spirit, you know, and it's just three little words that I try to live my life around: assume good faith. So yeah, I'll take it as intended. Why are you going through this? When all said and done, you'll still be married to Agnes, correct? Is this a matter of aesthetic and peace of mind or completeness? You have to want to do this, but what is the driving motivation? And the quickest answer is that this is the closest thing that medical science has to a cure for gender dysphoria, or to an alleviation of gender dysphoria. Because one of the hardest things to explain to people who have not dealt with it is gender dysphoria, because gender is cultural. It is a little bit, I mean, sex is medical and biochemical, but even that is not as clear cut as, say, the TERFs or Dave Chappelle would have you believe it to be. It's not a simple binary. There are.
Did you forgive me for a second? Did you say sex?
Yes, sex. Yeah.
Okay.
The
binary. Well, don't.
The binary.
Well, don't exclude glorious. I mean, don't.
Yeah. But the larger is it's hard to explain gender dysphoria because most people, you know, this only happens to about 1% of the population. Most people don't have it, will never think about it, it will never bother them. But if you have it, it's like a constant presence. And
you're never comfortable in your own skin.
Right. Yeah. But it goes deeper than that. It's how you interact with the world and the person you have to be, because this world until and still does hates people like me. This community is such a beautiful exception to the wider feelings of the world.
Okay, let me give you some advice, Robin. Seriously.
All right.
A certain black man in this country of a certain age that has, you know, I'm living in the Deep South, lived a lot of places, but I'm in the Deep South now. I wasn't raised here, obviously, Northeast. But so, you know, we can't, especially as a black professional, you can't go through life thinking all the time about how people hate you and they have contempt for you. And, you know, they can't understand why you, where you are and what you're doing, and they don't get it because it'll drive you crazy.
I agree.
So I would suggest that you just move forward and don't think about it.
Right. And I try not to. I try to be happy. I am more so than ever before. But just in the course of trying to explain gender dysphoria, it's awful because it's like, you know, you remember the little devil and angel Fred Flintstones that would appear on his shoulder? Well, it's like the angel is never there and the devil always is. And it says horrible things to you in your own voice. And that's why, according to some reports, up to 40% of trans people have at least attempted suicide. And way too many of them succeed. And the only thing approaching a cure for gender dysphoria is the surgery. There are some people, I guess, I don't fully understand. There are some people who are trans and have no dysphoria. I don't know how you can do that because dysphoria is the cause of it. But maybe you're just, maybe we're in a time, we're moving into a time when people can just be happy about it. Or maybe indifferent to it. You know, I don't wake up every morning going, God damn, I'm the luckiest in the world. I got blue eyes. No. And I don't wake up saying, you know, if only I was like a majority of the people on this planet and had brown eyes, everything would be okay. I don't. But gender dysphoria doesn't operate like that. So the motivation is to alleviate, and I want to make sure that I answer Ron's question, the motivation is to alleviate gender dysphoria.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, among other things, it is so important that we protect trans kids, because they are trying, these goddamn miserable human beings are trying to take away take away happiness from young people who don't have to live the life that older trans people have lived. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it can't be a complete cure, but I can't live with it anymore. I mean, I'm still...
Oh, and Jesse Lee Peterson has demanded that you register with him.
Oh, yeah, I know. He did. But, you know, I'm still going to be broad-shouldered. I'm still going to be 6 feet two. I'm still going to have size women's 13 wide shoes. And that, you know, shoes are just the bane of my existence. I'm going through speech therapy to try to learn to speak in a... different range and different style and pitch it up a little bit so that we have fewer of those hilarious incidents like when I looked at the old West Virginia couple and said, well, yes, ma'am, they are fake boobs, but I'm trying to grow my own as quick as I can. Because it's a funny story. It's a hilarious story. But it is also, you know, a somewhat painful part of my reality, if that makes any sense. So I'm trying, it's aesthetic to a certain extent. It's about looking externally what my brain says I am supposed to look like, because that's the way my brain is wired. It's not an emotional thing. It's a more concrete than you would imagine thing. The stuff like what you were talking about, you know, with the hate and everything, that's not on me. That's on other people. You know, someone's hate of trans people is a reflection on them, not on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, residing in the cauldron. Well, if I could interject for a second, I wanted to say thank you to Ron. I think that that was, if I was asking that from my perspective, I would consider myself to be very vulnerable, you know, to ask something like that. And second, when you were responding to that and you made reference to sex, I was tracking you, and then all of a sudden, I don't even know if this is going to make sense, but there's so much beauty to sex. There's so much, and in the richness of it, and you're seeking to come into your ownness.
Yeah, when I referenced sex, I was talking about the biological binary.
Which
isn't really a binary. That is a myth. As to sex, you know, a little slap and tickle, whatever. That's an entirely different subject matter, and all I can do is be open to whatever happens.
Well, I don't even mean it. It's kind of a tickle kind of thing. It was just when I was listening to you, you know, what happened, again, if it's just two or three people talking and interchanging, ideas come up, but we're respectful to listen to them.
Sure.
And in the process of that, when I heard about, when you mentioned sex, it opened up, you know, for me. And then I used the word glorious. But I didn't want to come across that when you were talking about, you know, the medical dysphoria of what you're in right now and responding to Ron, that I would be so cold and callous to say to you,
oh, not at all.
Oh, it's also glorious. Okay, well, it's important for me to clarify that, because then I don't have to try to write you to clarify. You know, it's just being clean. And when we get off, I love being clean with the two of you, knowing what, you know,
yeah,
what we've shared.
It's essential, and by that, I mean it partakes of an essence-ness.
Mm-hmm.
I did not take it in any bad way. And you know, probably the biggest takeaway with all of this, and it's an idea that came to me, I'm sure I'm not the first to have it, but there is the question of understanding. And for instance, Lee in New York just wrote, "I don't understand. I will probably never understand. But you know what? I do not have to understand. You've chosen your path. You've chosen your path. I can wish you happiness down that path." Precisely. And to put another word to what Lee just said, all of us, in however it is we are living our lives, we don't necessarily need other people to understand it, because, as I've said before, I don't understand. I don't understand why I had to lose some cosmic birth lottery and wind up the way I am. But I do have to accept it. I have to face the facts. And that's what transition ultimately wound up being, was me facing the facts. I am.
You know, that's standing, and that's being in the presence, you know, because I view certain aspects like wisdom and such. You know, you walk with truth and reality. And those are powerful, you know, traveling companions, because they demand a lot from us. Truth, I mean, it's iconic up there with peace and wisdom. So,
yeah, and so, you know, if I don't understand myself, how can I dare ask anybody else or expect anybody else to understand? The best we can do for one another is accept.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding is overrated. Understanding is some sort of sketchy pseudo-intellectual process. That is a sort of stand-in for empathy. Empathy is not the same thing as understanding. And understanding understanding is not the same thing as accepting. Tolerance. You know, we hear this word bandied about, tolerance. I don't want to be tolerated. You tolerate something you don't like but can't get out of your life. You know,
that's low level.
Yeah, you tolerate I don't know. Let's go ahead and ruin dinner. You know, you tolerate constipation and try to remedy it. You tolerate the festering zit on your ass. Well, I'm not any of those things, and no, and nor is any trans person. So, you accept it, and having accepted it, you can then deal with it.
You can. I would like to reiterate something you said a few days ago, and it's something that cognizant people, conscious people, often say, and that's when they have friends who are different. It's like, do you really think, like, I would put myself in this position if this weren't real, if this wasn't, you know, who I really am? Why do you think I go through all that, right? I mean, you're being the truth.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Like, what's the response? Do you ever get a response?
Gay people don't... Robin?
Jude wanted to jump in.
No, I was going to ask you, Todd, when you pose that question to them, do they ever have a cogent response, or is it just kind of left there?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't hear cogent. It dropped out. It depends on who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. You know, you have some people that are just they can't tolerate. They don't want to. You know, they can't deal with it at all. Period. And they don't understand how people have different types of friends. And they just don't get it. And then, and some folks do. But this is the argument I often use. It's, you know, it's like, well, do you think? I mean, because you're putting yourself out there. Seriously. Like, once again, it's like being black in America, like, in a way. You're a minority. You know you're going to be hated no matter what you do. But... You know, life is short. You have to be yourself. Life is too mm-hmm. short. We have to be ourselves and be the best.
Yeah, and, you know, it reminds me so much of Maslow's hierarchy. I mean, I see, you know, this cauldron mm-hmm. of where they are, you know, and really the, you know, psychological and safety, and not even safety needs. I mean, for that piece that you played, Robin, earlier about that fellow going into that store, and, I mean, what kind of insanity is that? You know, just trying to provoke and provoke and provoke. Yeah. And yet higher consciousness presented itself, you know, when they asked, do you believe in all of this? And yes, we do. Everyone here is. Those are those moments that have great power when we individually stand. I thought that was a really powerful piece. There's so many of them like that out there. But,
I'm so glad you brought up
guys, you too. Oh, yeah.
This whole conversation has been pure magic. It has been pure magic.
Oh. You're at the top of the pyramid, Robin. Maslow.
Yes, you are.
That's not the right word, but you're getting there, son.
Yeah, well, yeah, Maslow is the only person who came up with a pyramid scheme of which I approve.
Yes, unlike Betsy DeVos, yes.
Yeah, right.
Hey, I want to shift, if I could. You were talking about the fountain pen earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I was in school, we had the desks, you know, that they were all connected together. They had the metal at the bottom, and then the seat came up, and then they were all wooden and beautiful. And on the corner, the right corner, there was an open hole, and that's where we'd put our ink bottle. And we had the fountain pens that you put those in, and then you'd take that little silver lever and pull it up, and it would suck it all into that chamber.
Yeah.
And that, the nuns taught, that's, I used to have a really beautiful script when I wrote, but I've had so many surgeries in my hands because of arthritis. I have joints and pins and things, and but that brought back such a neat...
Yeah, what was it called? It's Spencerian... script.
I don't know.
That beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, it was just, and I, you know, and all that, there was only one nun in my whole life that I ever felt that I could understand who this God was, because all of them were so mean and bitter, and, you know, I was a little, I thought, man, who, you know, who would be married to this woman dressed in black with this great big white bib and everything, and, Which takes me back, Todd, to when you were talking about when we got into the Latin, and I mentioned about Puella, and we were, you know, you guys started laughing, and you went back to that teacher that you had, and I stopped you, in that. Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, but I stopped you because at the end of it, you said that you had started writing again, and that there was part of him that you thought could be identified like with a serial killer. I mean, that kind of intensity.
Right.
You know, you called in and did your mea culpa last week, which was so, you know, so tender and so revealing, like Ron writing tonight and asking Robin that, you know, what's that all about? And then the last fellow that wrote in, Robin stating to you that, you know, he'd never be able to understand, but could be able to, you know, just be, you know, present to that and knowing that we love you and that's where you are. It's just kind of that overflowing that, that happens.
It's a beautiful thing, the conversations that happen here. Thank you, Jude, and thank you, Todd, both so very much.
Okay.
Y'all have a lovely evening, okay?
You too, ladies.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye. Good night, you too. Good night.
It's just amazing and delightful. I love those conversations. Note coming in from Matt. The world that hates people like you. May I offer my perspective? In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, my inner dialogue was just that. In getting clean and sober, it was necessary to get clear and honest with myself and do inner work that required me not to think about what others thought of me, but what I felt about myself. Through that process, I showed the world my truth, and much of the world accepted me and celebrated my gifts. At the same time as my journey, many other gay men were doing the same. Fast forward a few decades, and through all of our efforts, much of the world loves us and accepts us. And there are some that hate me, I'm sure there are, but they're not part of my circle. I hope your journey brings you to a similar place, a place where you appreciate your worth and that and this surrounds you and celebrate and love you for all you are. You're already beautiful. The greater world will figure that out. Some people just take longer than others to get there. Thank you, Matt. I hope so, too. And I'm trying to do the work. And work it is indeed. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you to, thank you for this. Walker, subject line dysphoria. Let me add myself to those who don't understand but fully support you. Thank you. I was listening the night, New Year's Eve, you announced your true self and was shocked because you were one of the last people I would have thought was trans. But it didn't change the fact that you're the most talented radio voice I've ever heard. Thank you. Good luck with all you're about to experience and all the happiness to you and yours afterwards. Thank you. Thank you. It is daunting to ponder, but exciting as well. And, you know, I will, and then too bad about the Facebook blindness, though. No, I get it. It's just become such a part of, such a part of the culture that it's almost impossible to avoid. And I'm trying to do my little part, apart from occasionally ranting about how I despise Appalachian Electric Power. God knows that's a real sentiment, and you know. But I'm trying to do what I can to put positivity out there, to put out things that will make people smile, give people a moment of happiness, dare I say even joy. And you know, they said that they deliberately built Facebook's algorithms around anger and hate, because it builds traffic, and traffic means selling ads, and selling ads means more money for Mark Zuckerberg. And so I don't want to be part of that. I want to be a part of some degree of positivity, hope. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish. And, you know, I will put information out there as I'm sure that, you know, there'll be the obligatory "she just woke up" picture. Agnes and I have already talked about that. It will be at one and the same time, probably kind of horrifying for me, but also hopefully providing a little bit of uplift. And one thing I wanted to do on the way out the door is to reference what I mentioned before in the cold open to the program. The three counties in Maryland that are nearest West Virginia, Garrett, Allegheny, and Washington counties, have sent a letter, leaders in that, in those counties, have sent a letter to officials here in West Virginia. My God, what a gang of morons these guys are. Asking that West Virginia consider accepting Garrett, Allegheny, and Washington counties of Maryland into this state to be part of West Virginia. And the letter found its way to the desk of Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice. And he said, "I will put this in the form of a resolution in the very next opportunity that we have to call our people back into special session, and absolutely, we will vote without any question to open our arms and welcome." Little secessionist billionaire. I wonder if the state of Maryland has anything to say about that. I don't know. They're probably three of the poorest counties in Maryland, and they might very well say, "All right, goodbye. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you." But this beat down, bedraggled, broke ass state, and apparently those are the three. I'm guessing those are the three maggotiest counties in Maryland, and they want to be part of us. Because birds of a feather, or worms of a squirming. Is that what you call a group of worms, a squirm of worms? If it isn't, it should be. I can't imagine this is legal. I mean, they really want to secede from Maryland and join... If that's not more in Monday material, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, so it'll be interesting to see if it gets anything more than lip service. Do it for baby dog. Oh, my God. Yeah, thank you, Jude. Everything's fine. It's just time to wrap the program up is all. Because when I'm not on air or not doing prep for the program, we're doing prep to get the blue blazes out of here. And it's mind-blowing. So we'll keep up with that and see if anything comes of it. If you look at the map, you'll see it. It'll fuck up the unique shape of West Virginia. I don't want that. That's just... It'll screw up the thumb. And this state needs more maggots. Like, this state needs more maggots. Which is to say, not. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, thanks, Dave, number 11. Mention this at the end because I'm trying really, really hard not to talk about he who shall not be named, Dave Chappelle. But lo and behold, he's become, I guess, what we would call a, well, he's climbing up on the, he's pogo sticking up onto the cross, and he's a victim now, saying that he's been, he's had another film canceled. Poor baby. He's got a documentary about the live shows that he did, like, over the summer. And said that he's being canceled now because festivals that had invited him to show the documentary are now saying, yeah, no thanks. But as Rolling Stone points out, he is going to be screening it before tens of thousands of human beings in San Francisco, Minneapolis, Des Moines, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Toronto, Cincinnati, Columbus, Atlanta, and New York. And, of course, selling tickets to it. I wonder if maybe it'll be protested in San Francisco. I kind of hope so. Or, you know, Minnesota Nice in Minneapolis. Now, as for Des Moines, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Columbus, you know, I don't know, people might show up and say, you know, will you kill a trans on stage for us so we can watch and cheer, Dave? Not so sure about, well, he's Madison Square Garden, for fuck's sake. They're going to show a movie in Madison Square Garden. I don't know. New York's a big city. Probably sell out. There are probably that many transphobes in New York City. Oh, well. But curiously, while he said he is being canceled, I hope all your millions can help you blot away your tears, Dave. He won't say which film festivals have rescinded their invites. But of course, he's the victim, and the thing that blew me away about it is that in the Rolling Stone story, he writes he did a clip promoting it. I'm not going to play it. But he said, I'm more than willing to give you an audience, talking about trans people. Give you an audience. You know, kind of the way you have an audience with the Pope or some monarch. But you will not summon me. I am not bending to anybody's demands. And if you want to meet with me, I'd be more than willing to, but I have some conditions. First of all, you cannot come if you have not watched my special from beginning to end. In other words, you cannot come if you have not already put money in my pocket. You must come to a place of my choosing and a time of my choosing. Maybe in the middle of an anti-trans rally. And thirdly, you must admit that Hannah Gadsby is not funny. Cry louder. Cry louder. And Hannah Gadsby. Well, she's an Australian comedian. But apparently, Dave Chappelle despises her. Oh well. So there's that. Well, more in Monday. I think Dave Chappelle has crossed into more in territory. Pretty. Pretty more, Annie. Let's see. We're adding. We've added another attendee to the Horn Inn. It's over. If you want to jump in on it, it's still up and running. I want to get as many people in as we can because it's going to be a blast. Over at GoFundBob.com, and it's real easy to do. Just through that GoFundMe portal. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for the Have a Show on Me's. Thanks, Rico, for your challenge, which was met. Thanks to everybody who met them. We are happily down to 8:05 to go to finish the month and the week. And hopefully we'll get there. It would be awesome for the last program of October to be a fundraising free Friday. I'd love that if we could do it. Thank you, one and all. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Y'all are the reason this all exists. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this long-running conversation. In whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room. Thanks so very much. Thanks to Steve from Georgia Stan. Yeah, it was in the flesh on Pink Floyd's The Wall that contains those lyrics. Thank you, Steve. And this is a private coded message to Steve in Georgia Stan. Go Braves! Sorry, L.A. Dodger fans, and sorry, Astros fans. That was a great game. And it also, the World Series starts tomorrow. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Now, a union shop. Be a great time to reach out to your member of the House of Representatives. Ask him to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia. Yeah, you're right, Todd. You might have to pack and unpack a few times. Yup. Yup. It always happens, because it's just one great, big, annoying game of Tetris. Without the fun music. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. Get your booster. Wear your gloves. Wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer frequently and liberally. Wear your mask. Maintain your social distance. And if somebody comes towards you saying, you know what, we want to leave a healthy, prosperous, decent state and become part of West Virginia. Avoid that person like the plague. Because they are. Later.